This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Come on. We call it the place to be.
Yes, it's the place to be.
Then I shall be.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
It is contagious. It is the place to be, and we are live each and every Monday.
To do worse than Josh Richard.
We fuck it up, then go get it back. Now love when the baddies call me Zaddy. All you bitches upset, call them Maddies. Hey. Tell them we ain't lagging, yeah, we got the ratty. Got no time for no papa by your baby daddy. But I see you on your slim thick with the fatty. Oh. Waist so small, stomach all flatty. Makeup on fleek and the body tatty.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to the great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. I am your co-host, Justin Rosero, with you live here on this Monday evening inside the PTBN studios. And joining me, as always, is my PIC, Mr. Scott Criscola. Scott, how are you?
Good evening, JR. Good evening, Place to Be Nation. Welcome to the longest-running episodic Thanksgiving fucking gold standard. Well, it's Thanksgiving tonight in our world. Episode 482. JR, always a pleasure. How are you, sir? How's the ankle doing?
Better.
Are you in the pool? You're on the elliptical? You're doing the,
I've been doing
the aquatic rehab?
Yeah, the elliptical. About 92%. I'll peg myself. Okay. Still some soreness in there. By the way, Scott, I don't think we mentioned it over the last couple episodes, but happy, what is it, 7th, 8th, whatever. I'm bad with the years.
It is technically 7th.
Right. So,
happy 7th birthday.
Yes. A couple weeks ago. Celebrated the 7th birthday of the Place to Be podcast. I kicked off back in February of 2011. So, happy birthday.
We didn't have a special.
Yeah, you know, when you get far enough into the relationship, you kind of stop with the gifts and whatnot.
Yeah,
you
just,
so
we give each other cards.
Celebrations. We're here.
Yeah, we remember talking about Matt Cain or fucking Lincecum or something at 3 o'clock in the morning back in episode 2.
That's it. The spark is fading, but it's okay. We're still together.
It's like Archie and Edith, you know. Success without having to really show it. So,
well, you know what's not fading is the stench in my basement, and that is due to one man. That is our third man in the booth here tonight. So, John D'Amato. John, how are you?
Wonderful. Speaking about the spark and lame birthdays, thanks for the happy birthday to your lovely daughter, but not a happy birthday to me, unfortunately.
Yeah.
The years just fly by. Last year for my 50th, I was in lovely blue waters of Aruba, and this year I was singing Creep to a bunch of Long Island lushes who were hiding from their friggin' kids, you know. quite a contrast.
I think you were going to say you snuggled up on the futon with McGinn while doing your double-team Dutch ovens, but no, you're here.
Last night was the highlight.
Hey, I heard about that.
I
heard there was a return nobody cared about.
Diminishing returns on the pops or Dan's every time he shows up, but it's Dan returned. I think we all enjoy the show. It was a decent pay per view and nothing great, but the atmosphere and the crowd in this room made it worth it. The Rock showed up. Dan was here, Sousa, so it was a good time. We had a lot of
fun. Excellent.
Don't forget the cowboy. Yeah,
he's always here.
He's always there. he stays under the couch.
Had a good time. But I did have a bit of a tumultuous Saturday. It was our birthday party for both of our kids. We did a joint party. And we always get the pizza from the same place in Coventry, Di Petrillo's. And my wife, we're on the way home from Foxwoods Friday. Went to the Sugar Factory. And I told her, I said, why don't you call and just get the pizza order in so we're all set. We don't have to worry about it in the morning. So she calls, but the number she had in her phone was under Di Petrillo's, but there was an old Di Petrillo's in Cranston, Scott. I don't know if you remember this. We used to go there sometimes
near that
Dunkin' Donuts over there. Okay.
Near the Dunkin' Donuts, yep.
So they had a split, and they changed their name, but for whatever reason, she never updated her phone. So she calls and puts the order in, and we think we're good. So Saturday morning, I show up at the one that I thought the order was at, and they're like, oh, we don't have an order for you. So, but they're super nice. Like, you know, we could figure it out. And I should have noticed because when she placed the order on the phone, like the size and pricing was all different than normal. And we just didn't piece it together. So I call her up and I'm like, look, I'm putting the order in here. Call the other place and just tell them, you know, we fucked up. We're not in the area. We're not going to make it over there. So she calls. And this motherfucking guy flips out on her. Like before she can even get the words out of her mouth, he was saying, I'm the only one who makes this big pizza. How am I going to be able to sell this now? You owe me $100 worth of pizza ingredients. You better come down here and pay me. You're only 15 minutes away, blah, blah, blah. And then he's like, I'm going to call my attorney on you. Like, all this shit. So she calls me in fucking tears, right? Like, just all upset because this guy just laid into her. And I'm going back and forth, right? I'm like, do I call this guy back and let him have it? Do I wait and hope he calls me? Like what do I do, right? So I decided just to leave it alone and hope he called me, and he never did. So he's a gigantic pussy on top of everything. But I bring it up because anyone who's in this area should not go to Albertino's Pizza in Cranston. Because what aggravated me more, and at the end, at its core, this is just a customer service story, right? We fucked up, okay? And out of courtesy, I said, call the guy so he knows we're not coming. So he's just sitting there waiting, thinking he's a fucking pizza man. By trade, you sell pizza all day long. It's 9 in the morning. Like, just sell the pizza. It's not that hard. Or eat it. Whatever. I mean, eat the fucking pizza. It's like you're going to throw it away. And at the very least, if no one's going to buy a giant party pizza, like, take the pieces and put them in smaller boxes. Like, who's going to know when the pizza was from? To sell small pizzas at the counter. No one's going to walk in there and buy a fucking pizza. Like, what the fuck with this guy? So, I'm praying he calls his fucking lawyer and, like, shows up with a subpoena for $100 pizza. But, I mean, just ridiculous. Like, we talk about customer service a lot. I think it's fitting that we're on our 7th birthday kind of show here, Scott, because, you know, it's been, like, a common theme over these 7 years of customer service issues. And the stupidity of this guy is, if he just was, like, cool about it, and said, sure, don't worry, mistakes happen. Like, we would have been promoters, right? We probably would have made it up to him. We would have went back. I would have posted. You know, I'm pretty – when something goes right, I post about it. I promote the place. But instead, he had to be a douche over one pizza or three pizzas, whatever it was. And now, like, all I'm going to do is just badmouth the place and just never go back there. Like, is it worth it? Is that quality customer service? Or is that just – am I being ridiculous? I mean, we owned it. We called and said we fucked up, but – no way to treat your customers.
No. I mean, I can understand his frustration, but he didn't have to, like, level legal threats at a you know, and I know your wife very well, and she's not exactly a threatening woman on the phone.
No.
So, you know, I mean, I think he might have gone a little overboard in that aspect.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. And you know, I was just mad at myself for not. I made her call because I was like, look, I'm here. You know, you fucked up. You call, basically. I didn't feel like calling. Now I wish I called, because if that guy pulled that shit on me, it would have been a whole different fucking bag of oranges, the conversation.
But, I mean, were you getting the same kind of pizza like the normal Di Petrillo's, like the party pie, right? The same way it's done and everything?
Well, no. They both make – they make like an actual pizza, like pepperoni.
Oh, okay.
Like, yeah. But he's like, I'm the only one in town who makes like this size of a pizza. Like, who gives a fuck? Cut it up. It's pizza. You jackass. Go give it to fucking homeless people down the street. Whatever. Like, come on, you know?
He should have put it in a car and drove down to Norwalk. He would have been able to sell it easily.
Dropped it off at the Elimination Chamber party there. But
yeah. We had some pretty good pies. I'm feeling the pie that we had was probably better than his anyway. But
fuck you,
anyway.
Albertino, jackass.
Yeah, Albertino, Albertina.
I remember that guy was fucking weird anyway, but yeah. So anyway,
well, since we're talking customer service, in the pantheon of the JR stories, it's pretty good, but I don't think it comes close to your parents' TV. I think that one might be the kicker.
Yeah, no, this one's all right. I mean, this one could have been better if the guy called me back.
The Delta Airlines one is pretty good too.
Yeah, the Delta one was good.
The Delta one was good, but your dad, the Vizio, right? Wasn't it a Vizio Walmart?
Yeah.
Is that what it was?
Yeah, Vizio. I mean, they were wrong on that one. Like, this one, it's hard to get too worked up because we fucked up. And, well, I'll admit it, but this one would have been better if the guy actually had the balls to call me, but he's a gigantic pussy, which I figured he would be. It makes it worse that he was trying to bully her into going to buy the pizza and then doesn't call back. Like, you know, he just cowers.
Yeah, that's shitty. Trying to stiff arm her when really he didn't
no, he's
give
a
shit.
Jackass. But you know, the Vizio and then the Department of Health with the bat, that was another one.
Right. I forgot about that one.
Yeah. So that's a good one. Yeah.
That's a good one. But I like the Delta and the – I think in our history,
Delta,
we're going to have to talk about it in 500s. The Delta and the Vizio are my two favorites.
Although I'll give them some props because they're taking a stand on this NRA stuff, so good on them. But overall, they still suck. So
anyway, well, let's go from pizza to turkey, because tonight, JR, since as Mr. D'Amato is here, we know that it is a pay-per-view. But you're thinking, November? It's not WrestleMania. No. On this evening, November 26th, 1987, we debut a brand new pay-per-view. And it is called the Survivor Series, taking place live from the Richfield Coliseum in Richfield, Ohio. Obviously, there's no other shows going on this night, so everybody is in Richfield. JR, a little background, perhaps, on why the show was created and what the genesis of it was.
Richfield, Ohio. So in 1987, the NWA and Jim Crockett's promotions began a stretch into more of areas of the country. The biggest event of the year, of course, always held on Thanksgiving night. It became a tradition for the Southern Wrestling Company, and that is Starrcade. For the 1987 event, though, they held that show in Chicago, outside of the normal Southern stronghold, with the emerging pay-per-view market. It was going to be their first major pay-per-view event. All major NWA events prior to that one had been a closed circuit. In order to compete with that, Vince McMahon created the Survivor Series, which would focus on tag teams, teams of five striving to survive. McMahon scheduled his event for the same night as Starrcade and then put the pressure on the pay-per-view providers by telling them they would not get to air WrestleMania 4 if they did not air Survivor Series exclusively. Pretty douchey move, but a shrewd business move, I guess. So most of the providers, of course, chose WWF. Cutting it to Starrcade's viewership. The companies were not pleased, the pay-per-view companies, that is, with all these tactics and having to choose between the two. Crockett would move to Starrcade into December the year after, but would get a bit of revenge in early 88, as we will talk about shortly, in a few weeks anyway. So that is all I have for the open here.
Okay. So the concept, of course, is teams, which is kind of neat. Teams of wrestlers facing each other, five per side, and any sort of pinfall, submission, DQ, any type of loss, and you are out of the match. And mm-hmm. the guy or guys or gals or teams remaining are the survivors. And four matches on this evening.
Yep.
And it laid out pretty good. We have the mid-card match, we have the women's match, we have the tag match, we have the main event match. So it was actually pretty good.
They definitely did it well, splitting up the card and breaking things up. I like that part of it.
Johnny, what were your thoughts on the concept going in?
Definitely, you hit it right on the head. How they separated, like there's one based on the around the world title, and there's one surrounding like the IC title, and one surrounding the tags, and one surrounding the women. It was perfect split how they did it, and definitely an interesting concept. You get to see guys that once hated each other, and now you're psyched to see them team up together. So, wonderful, very original. Mm.
All right, so this is our first non-Mania classic pay-per-view. Gorilla Monsoon and Jesse Ventura in the booth. They get introduced by the Fink, and they come in and set the stage for this new Thanksgiving tradition. They run down all the matches and the rules of the bouts, get everything set up, and then we go backstage with Craig DeGeorge, who's with the Honky Tonk Man and his team. They're fired up. Honky puts over his teammates and the managers and crows about their impending victory and also threatens to shake Reynolds' role, Miss Elizabeth. We then head to Mean Gene, who talks to Randy Savage's team. They say they'll be the survivors. Jim Duggan wants revenge on Harley Race, and Savage vows to take out the Honky Tonk Man en route to winning the match. And that does bring us to our opener, and that is Team Savage, Randy Savage, Jake Roberts, Jim Duggan, Ricky Steamboat, and Brutus Beefcake taking on the Honky Tonk Man team. Of course, Honky Tonk Man, Dangerous Danny Davis, Harley Race, Hercules, and Ron Bass. So Team Honky all gets booed soundly as they march out to Race's music before Honky comes out to his own tune. Savage team is loaded and filled with old enemies, which was very interesting. John, you alluded to it. But having Savage in there with Jake Steamboat, was pretty cool. I kind of like the ties in there. So you get these three guys, even Jake and Steamboat obviously were heated rivals as well. So these three guys all teaming up now since they're on the same side was kind of neat for longtime fans. Nice slot for Duggan as he gets reestablished. The whole team gets a warm welcome, but Savage and Liz's pop just blows the roof off. Beefer and Herc opens things up with a stalemate, and then Herc lands a knee and some clubbing blows. They continue to trade offense until Beefer grabs a sleeper to a pop. Herc scrambles through the hold and tags Danny Davis, who Beefcake meets with a hip toss and sends Ron Bass flying too. Beefcake works over Davis and tags in Jake to a big pop. Jake unloads and starts to work the arm and tags in Macho, and the crowd is just losing it now. Steamboat tags in and hits a chop off the top rope, but runs into a knee. Davis tags Harley, who comes in and hits Steamboat before going to a shoulder breaker. Steamboat comes back with a chop off the middle, and then he and Race trade some blows. Race tries twice to pitch Steamer, but he skins the cat both times, and then Steamboat dumps Race. Harley comes back with a belly-to-belly for two before tagging, before Steamboat tags Duggan. Gorilla and Jesse mention their hot feud as Duggan lands punches and clotheslines Harley to the floor, and the two brawl out there until they both get counted out, which I thought was a good way to keep the feud going and get over the piece of the gimmick that Duggan could probably... they kind of get over the gimmick, but I think Duggan could have used more shine. It happened really fast. Were you guys surprised? And we can take this in chunks, or we can save it to the end, whatever you guys want to do. But were you surprised to see Duggan, and I guess Race, but more so Duggan, go down so quickly?
Yes. I wasn't really expecting protection in this match, except for Savage and Honky, to be honest. I felt like everybody else was, I don't want to say disposable, but, like they could have taken losses, pins or whatever, and been fine. But, obviously this is a big feud. It had started back at the Slammies, right? Was it the Slammies where they were throwing the potato salad and the macaroni salad at each other?
Yeah, escalated there. Yeah.
So it's been going on all summer, really.
Actually, that was funny, after this. The Slammies are after this. The Slammies are December.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So that hadn't happened yet.
Yeah. All right. So, I was a little surprised that they were squelched that quickly. I don't know if Harley didn't look that good. Like he looked not just out of shape, but he didn't look well. I don't know, something about him that seemed off to me. I don't know. What do you think, John?
No, not really surprised because the babyface teams, it's just got too much star power. That's like a dynamic team to start off. And it's going to be a reoccurring theme for 1987. It was like the year of the babyface. I mean, so many guys turned and so many great guys that there was too many, and you can't put them all over. So so somebody's got to take a pin, or at least got to get eliminated. You can't have all five guys win, and especially in this match, the babyface team was so much more the dynamic, and so there was so much more star power than the heel team was very weak. In my opinion, on this, the outcome was pretty obvious.
Yeah, I was surprised more that how quick it happened. Like, it happened a lot more quickly than I remembered. It was, like, within minutes. Like, Duggan and Race are barely even in the ring. And Duggan barely gets any shine time. But, yeah, I mean, they definitely had to pick and choose who was going to move on. So, that goes down. We reset with Jake and Ron Bass as Bass slams a snake but misses an elbow. Savage tags in and drills Bass with a knee to the back and then a running elbow. And Jesse puts over Macho as he slams the Outlaw and goes over and decks Honky. Bass cuts down Savage with a clothesline and tags Honky, who kicks away. But Savage comes right back. Bass comes in and cuts him down with a back elbow and tries for his finisher, but Savage blocks it with a backdrop and tags Beefcake. Bass doesn't see the tag and runs right into a Beefcake high knee, and now he gets eliminated. So another quick night for Ron Bass as well. He got a little bit of shine in there, but he goes down to Beefer. Herc comes in and Beefcake's all over him until Hercules slugs him and takes over with power strikes. Honky comes in and works the arm. Herc comes back and does the same. Honky is back in, keeping the pressure on, fending off a comeback by going to the eyes. Savage gets antsy on the apron as the crowd tries to rally Brutus, and eventually it works as the barber breaks the hold with an atomic drop. Gorilla and Jesse chastise Beefcake for not tagging out, but Brutus keeps peppering the champ until Davis hits him in the back when he hits the ropes. Honky pounces and hits a shake, rattle, roll, and eliminates the barber. And Jesse is all over this. He says it's a huge mistake by Beefcake for not having tagged out. I was more surprised to see anyone actually get hit by the shake, rattle, and roll and pin, because I feel like we never saw that outside of like squash matches on TV. I feel like Honky never hits it in big matches, but Beefcake succumbs there. So he's a second man out for the faces. Savage heads in and chases Honky, but the champ tags Herc, who pummels Macho. Jesse says Macho's too focused on Honky, and it's going to cost him if he keeps it up. Davis comes in and hammers away. Savage fights back until Danny tags the IC champ, who chokes away. Savage ducks a clothesline, hits the back elbow, tags Jake. He comes in and levels the champ, but comes up empty on a DDT. Jake eats a knee on a charge, and Jesse says Honky is very lucky, which is more important than being good sometimes. Honky starts to club away and tags Danny Davis, who gets some shots in. Jake quickly makes a comeback, levels Davis with a short clothesline, hits the DDT. He's gone. Massive pop for that. Hercules comes in and decks Jake with a leaping clothesline as Gorilla talks about how smart Herc has gotten since joining Bobby. Herc and Honky trade off pounding on the snake, grinding him with chin locks. Jake breaks free, drops Honky with a knee lift, but Herc gets a tag and cuts him off. Jake breaks another chin lock and tags Steamboat, comes in red hot, cleans house, leveling them all with chops. He slams Herc, tags Savage, who hits a big elbow off the top, leaving Honky 3-on-1 with his bitter enemies. Savage mangles Honky, but Macho comes in, comes up empty on a knee to the corner, allowing the champ to choke away. Savage comes back with a big elbow and a boot, tags in Steamboat, keeps up the pressure. Jake comes in, toys with Honky a bit as the crowd is just losing it. Savage kept up the pace, battering Honky, heads to the top and hits a double axe handle. Macho follows an atomic drop and sends Honky over the top to the floor, and he says, fuck it, he wastes no time. Him and Jimmy Hart run to the back and take the count-out loss. Fun opener, loaded teams. The finish is fun, too. Well-booked with Honky's three biggest enemies all at the end getting the revenge and offense in, and Honky getting out of Dodge to avoid injury and getting pinned. Chicken shit heel at its best. Everyone here looked pretty good, except for really Racing Duggan, who went out quick. Savage gets to beat up Honky, still without the title. And my only criticism here would be, like, we've seen Savage and Honky fight a bunch of times. We'll see it again, too. And we keep kind of bemoaning the feud because Honky's never going to pin Savage. And Savage isn't going to win the title back. So we're kind of in this pattern of, like, you know, DQ, count out, fuck finish. Like, this was a prime spot to have Savage just get a pin on Honky. Like, and maybe it reheats the feud again, too. I don't get why Honky can't lay down 3-on-1. I get the chicken shit thing. It's been his calling card. But give the fans a little catharsis. Let Savage get the pin on him for once. Because otherwise, he's not going to. So at least maybe it would have closed the feud a little bit. I'll stop there. I went 3 stars on this opener, Scott. So what are your thoughts on all that plus the Honky Savage stuff?
I gave this 2.5. Let me talk about the match itself first. I agree with Johnny that I didn't realize until he said it that these teams were kind of imbalanced. I mean, you've got 5 of the most over faces in the whole company, and to think that 3/5 of that team 11 months ago were all heels. Savage, Jake, and Beefer.
Brutus.
Yeah. All heels, which is kind of nuts. And the babyface, the heel team other than Honky was pretty fucking putrid. Nobody wants Danny Davis on any teams anymore. I mean, Ron Bass is fine. Harley obviously has outlived his usefulness.
I don't know yet on Harley. I mean, like, I think him and Duggan's a pretty good feud. I get that the heel star power is not strong, but I don't think Harley's, like, cooked yet. I don't know. I think he's still got some stuff in the tank. Like, I think
he's, I don't know. Something about him just looked off. Like, he didn't look right. I don't know.
Maybe on this night, but I think he's still been pretty good. Like, show for us.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he did this, like, when Honky's music was playing. I don't know if you guys know, Harley was doing, like, some kind of little, like, I don't know, two-step dance or something. He's like, it was really funny. I don't know. It made me laugh when I saw it. The match was good otherwise. A good back and forth. I agree about Hercules. In a weird way, I think being with Bobby has definitely helped him kind of get a ring sense of stuff that he didn't do, you know, before. But I don't get why Honky couldn't eat a pin here. Now, this is on a national scale we're talking about this feud. Obviously, guys, we saw Savage get a pin on Honky in a non-title match at the Garden. But that was at the Garden. You know, people in, you know, Wisconsin didn't see that unless you had a tape. And even back then, tape trading was, you know, pretty thin. So unless you were not in the tri-state area, you had no idea that Honky ever got got pinned by Savage. So in a national sense, and this is where, and it's one thing that I've noticed, JR, as we're going between house shows, pay-per-views, and Saturday Night's main events, things are treated differently. You're exactly right. And I think pay-per-views are the same way. We locally saw Savage get a pin on Honky, but not nationally. And this was a perfect spot for that. I agree with you 100%. Now,
yeah, I mean, he wouldn't have lost anything, and he's protected because it's 3-on-1. Right. So you have Jake come in, level him. You have Steamboat level him, and Savage hits the elbow. I mean, Honky's not going to lose any luster, and he doesn't have much anyway. You know, it's like, even though he's been better than we've always thought, he's been fine. Like, he's not looked at as a dominant wrestler. Like, losing to these three guys would not have dulled his shine in any way, and probably adds more heat to him in a way.
Right. And I have one of my notes I have here. Jesse even says, "You may not think Honky's very good in the ring, but he is lucky.
Yeah.
And sometimes Gorilla It's better to be lucky than good. So Jess even acknowledges he's a terrible wrestler, you know. Having said that, I feel like the IC title has been kind of transferred out of their feud and has been solely now on him shoving Elizabeth and mistreating her. So I feel like the IC title is not really Savage, is what Savage is looking for out of Honky anymore. I think he just wants to punish him for shoving Elizabeth. That was on a national scale. So now, having said that, I still think Honky should have made a pin here. But I'm just telling you that I don't think Savage cares about the IC title anymore. I think he's more looking now to defend his manager's honor after she got dumped on that Science Main event. But the match was solid enough for what it was. And I think Honky running off, yes, it does continue his character. But in this instance, perfect chance for Savage to get kind of a definitive national pin.
Right. You could have had him even like try and run and they pitch him back in. So you, if you want to really play up the chicken shit thing, right? He escapes, right. But maybe Beefcake walks him back or Jake chases him down, something.
Right. Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah. I agree. But, John, 2.5 for me. What are your thoughts?
I'm going 3. I can't glow enough about the dynamic of Jake teaming with Steamboat and Macho. Those are like 3 of my all time favorites. Just right off the bat, this is probably my favorite team of all time, my favorite Survivor Series team of all time. And actually, originally it was supposed to be Junkyard Dog was advertised for the match, and then maybe like a week before, all of a sudden in the Indies, they said JYD is out, and all of a sudden they said Ricky Steamboat. So I guess they must have made a last second call, and they said, hey, Ricky, can you ask your wife if you could come in?
That's interesting. So do you think they were going to leave him off the card completely, Steamboat? I guess so.
Yeah, because he wasn't really going around the circuit. I mean, he was still home with the baby. If you watch a couple of the prime times during this time, a couple of weeks before, you would see that it was originally supposed to be Junkyard Dog, and then at the last minute, they slid him in there. So that made the team ballistic. I mean, it would have been, you know, at least somebody else would have been able to take a pin like a Beefcake, you know, to JYD. But that made the team so dominant. It was ridiculous. And also, I liked when Jesse said that Honky survived by running away. He survived. You know, Jesse was getting over that's the survivor theme of the night. And he said he survived by running away. I like that line. And I agree with you guys. The crowd went ballistic when Jake DDT'd Danny Davis. Can you imagine if Jake got a DDT on Honky and then Macho followed with an elbow? They would have tore the roof off the place.
I agree.
Yeah. That's the way they should have gone. So is there any way?
Yeah, they were squeezing too much toothpaste out of tube by having Honky be the chicken shit and the chase. Sometimes with the chases too long, you exhaust it. So I think they were going to the well with that, like saying, okay, Honky escaped this time, but come to whatever North Dakota next week where you see Honky versus Macho, you know, where Macho will get to finally pin him next week, or you know, they still had to try to get people into the houses.
Did anyone have either of you have a kind of a hidden MVP of this match? I thought Hercules was kind of one of the glue guys, and you mentioned him briefly, Scott, but I thought like. He really kept things chugging for the heel team. Anytime there was kind of a transition in segment or there was a, like, he'd always come in and kind of steady the match a bit. Like, he's definitely been someone throughout the course since late 86 into 87. That's really won me over as a heel worker. And I thought he really got a lot of chance to shine. He was the top guy next to Honky in there at the end. Anytime he came in, he usually was controlling the match. He bumped around. He had some pretty crisp offense. I thought he kind of was the secret kind of hidden MVP of this match. He kept it chugging along.
Yeah, it was tough though because Honky overshadowed that whole team. Like even in the pre-match interview, nobody else got a word in. It was all Honky. I'm gonna shake right over all this. It was he really overshadowed that team, and nobody else really. Really shine, but Herc did his work a little bit.
I agree with John on that. I feel like the like I said, the face team was very balanced in terms of star power, but I think I agree with you on Herc, JR. Like I said earlier, I think Jesse said it in very kayfabe, but I think it's true that having Bobby with him is kind of helping him with his ring I guess, savvy, if you will, but at least getting, you know, knowing what to do in the ring and what to do in certain situations. And I think having Bobby as his manager has helped that. But I agree with John. That heel team, other than Honky, was kind of the shits for them in general. Again, specifically, Herc has been fantastic. Was really good. But I mean, the star power in this, on this face team, and even though it was kind of weird, I mean, a year ago, fucking Savage almost ended Steamboat's career. Right. He's on the same team. It was very strange.
Yeah. And Jake almost put his head through a friggin' concrete.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Jake almost fucking killed him.
And
so you two
staked on his throat. So yeah, they went from blood feud to now they have a common enemy. Wanting to kill friggin' Honky Tonk. That was beautiful.
Yeah. So in a heel symmetry sense. John and I got three guys who a year ago wanted to kill each other, and now they hate Honky so much that they're willing to just kind of let bygones be bygones. Whether that makes any sense or not is, you know, the eye of the beholder or the eye of the fan, I guess, specifically. But yeah, Herc definitely stands out, particularly because the rest of that heel team other than Honky was really nothing spectacular.
Also, so. what did you guys think that as far as Brutus at this stage, his face turn didn't really take off because I think he got hurt when after WrestleMania 3 they had him really set up for a nice feud with Adonis, and he got hurt by Adonis leaving, so he was kind of lost out there without anybody to feud. That would have been a good feud to spark his face turn with Adrian, was there with matches around the horn. That would have been perfect matches, like Sad Night's main event with him versus Adrian, with Jimmy bouncing around and Adrian with the bald head. But Adrian bailing out kind of hurt his face turn.
Yeah, I mean, he gets a good pop here and everything, but you could tell he doesn't really have much going on and much to do. He's kind of been having the feud with Valentine, but otherwise not
yeah,
too
he was definitely overshadowed by these big dogs. He was definitely overshadowed.
Yeah, I mean, he's the only face that loses clean. I mean, Duggan gets the count out. He's the only one that gets pinned.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with that. I definitely think. And I mean, I don't know. And I think it's more that I think they knew that Beefcake could be a good face. I think they were just kind of letting him tread water because I'm sure they had things laid out for him for 1988. And we just needed to get there. But yeah, I agree, John. Because I think Adonis bolting.
He was a victim of all these turns, because look at all these face turns we have, and we're going to see more later in the main event. They brought in a lot of guys, and everybody babyface, and not enough heels.
Mm. Yeah, it's true. But so solid enough match to open the show.
Yeah, no, I like the match itself. I thought it was well done, and like John said, I mean, the star power on that face team is absurd. So it's a good choice to get the show going too. I mean, the crowd is going to be amped for that team, especially for Savage get his hands on Honky and everything. So, all right, we go backstage. Craig DeGeorge is with Andre the Giant and his team, talking about the main event and taking out Hulk Hogan for good, along with the rest of his team. And that brings us to the showcase for the women's division, and that is the Fabulous Moolah's team taking on our women's champion leading her team, that is Sensational Sherry. And Sherry's team is made up of Dawn Marie, Donna Christianello, fresh off her prom date with Scott Criscolo, and the Glamour Girls.
I was going to say the Glamour Girls are Johnson, my ex-wives.
Taking on the Fabulous Moolah's team of the Jumping Bomb Angels, Rockin' Robin, and Old Velvet McIntyre. We do have a couple of debuts here. Rockin' Robin, born Robin Denise Smith, October 9th, 64, Hammond, Louisiana. Her and her brother Sam Houston, children of Grizzly Smith, of course, former wrestler, born after his first marriage dissolved. Her half-brother is, of course, Jake the Snake Roberts, born during their father's first marriage. He was born out of love and still love him. She trained with her sister Nicola Roberts, of course, otherwise known as Baby Doll, under Nelson Royal. And in 1987, Smith competed as Rockin' Robin in Wild West Wrestling, where she feuded with Debbie Combs and Sue Green. When the WWF decided to restart the women's division in the late 80s, both women tried out, but the role ultimately went to Smith. Also mentioned Dawn Marie, who, along with the WWF, wrestled primarily in Japan, NWF, and Ladies Professional Wrestling Association. In March of 86, wrestled at the Boston Garden, teaming with Velvet against Bull Nakano and Dump Masamoto, as far as Bull and Dump, the Rotella special. And
right,
finally,
Donna
Christianello, born Mary Alfonsi, May 23rd, 1942, in Pittsburgh.
1912.
1942, so she was what? fucking 45.
He was
almost 46 in this match. Employed at a restaurant in Pittsburgh when she decided to contact a wrestling promoter.
Could you even finish this?
To become a professional wrestler.
She worked at a fucking diner.
Male wrestlers Waldo Von Erich and Klondike Bill helped set her up with women's wrestling trainer, the Fabulous Moolah.
She worked at that pizza place, Depot Toilet.
Albertini's. Albertino's. she jizzed in Scott's fucking Elimination Chamber pizza. She moved to South Carolina to train with Moolah in 1963. Lived in the same area, same room as Moolah, on and off for 40 years, tied up in fucking chains, I'm sure. Ending in May 99 when she moved back to Pittsburgh while living with Moolah. She helped train women wrestlers, Sherry Martel and Brittany Brown, retired, employed by Walmart in the accounting department. And passed away from chronic obstructive pulmonary disease at the age of 69 on August 25th, 2011. More than you ever needed to know about the life and times of Donna Cristianello. It's funny, too, because we kind of did the mea culpa on the Glamour Girls last week, Scott, kind of talking about how we always disrespected them more than we should have, when our real venom should have been spewed at Dawn Marie and Donna Cristianello. These fucking C-heads.
Dawn Marie, the pride of Newington, Connecticut. I forgot she was from Newington. Other than the lottery headquarters, there's really nothing to be proud about in the town of Newington.
What the fuck is Newington?
It's north of Hartford. It's almost near the Mass line. That's where the state lottery headquarters are.
Sounds
and
awful.
Pretty much that's it. There's nothing else. And Dawn Marie's house. It's pretty much
Cristianello, just a sea hag. I mean, where did they, like, they couldn't find another fucking women's wrestler, like, that they could have. I mean, where is, what's her name? Who's the girl that we had the fucking stiff match? We talked about her last week.
The blonde girl, yeah, the blonde girl.
Desiree
Peterson, where's she?
Yeah,
like, she was good.
Yeah.
There's going to be somebody else.
Where was the one that Moolah beat the shit out of? What's her face? The one from a few house shows ago. I can't think of her name now.
There's other choices.
Cooks, right? Was that her name? Brandy Cook or something? I got to look up at our old man. Remember, there was another blonde that Moolah.
Well, Debbie Combs.
Debbie Combs. That's Debbie Combs.
I mean, she's around. I mean, you know, I'm guessing Moolah has got her girl a payday. I mean, if her and Donna were that tight, so that might have been it, or that loose.
Well, Donna went from doing something on the I was going to say something else. Donna Cristianello, she's working in the accounting department. High promotions from what she was doing outside of Walmart when she was doing wrestling career.
ZJ's. And then she finally Slipknot. Yeah.
Yes. she was a master of martial arts.
All right.
What's funny? Dawn Marie looked moderately young. Like, Donna Cristianello literally looked like she'd been fucking.
Well, she was 45. I mean, that's a hard 45. She didn't live an easy 45. She lived a hard 45, man.
I mean, I don't know if it's the Pittsburgh air. I don't know what the fuck it was, but holy shit.
Just grew up in the fucking coal mine.
Jesus. I mean, Judy was looking pretty Judy, when Judy's like the sixth hottest in the ring, you know you're in a lot of fucking trouble.
Dawn Marie, there's not even a birth year for Dawn Marie anywhere. we don't know how old she is.
Oh, Jesus Christ. It's amazing.
Awful. All right, let's get to this fucking match here. So, showcasing the women, working our way through the roster. Champs in the ring with her crew. Across the ring is the former champ, the very, very grizzled Moolah, as well as her old foe, Velvet McIntyre, and the Red Hot Jumping Bomb Angels and the Bland Rockin' Robins. Sherry great out of the gate, playing up her heel flair, sneering at everyone. And a good, interesting mix of young and old, in ways really kind of a passing of the torch match as well. Gorilla notes that Moolah's announced at 160 pounds, which Jesse says is beefy for her. But is this it for Moolah, by the way? I don't think we see her again, right? For a long time.
Yeah. I don't think so, right? She's not. I mean, we'll find out if she shows up on a national stage. I think she's gone, but I mean, we'll have to keep, as we keep looking at, you know, as we keep watching MSG shows, maybe she's local, but I know we don't see her on Science Main Events or pay-per-views from this point out, so.
Yeah, I'm curious when she's done here.
Yeah.
I'm trying to look it up quick.
If we don't see her like at the Garden for the next,
I think this is
like,
it. I think she's done. And then she returns in whatever in the 90s later on. Whatever. I'm not going to miss her. She's useless. So, anyway, here we go. Jesse brags about Running Man, of course, his new movie, and he pretty much forces Gorilla to congratulate him about it. Sherry jumps Velvet at the bell, batters her from corner to corner, follows with a sit-out clothesline. Velvet gets a crossbody for two, tags Moolah, who chops and uppercuts away. Jesse says Gorilla and Moolah were sweethearts back in 1936, as Sherry tags in Donna, who gets mauled by Moolah. We get a brief showing from Titano, which she quickly tags Velvet, who gets a nice flurry in on Donna, picking up a near fall. Old Donna tries to punch back, but Velvet's all over her, gets a roll up for the elimination, sends her back to the sea. Back to register six for her as well. Leilani Kai rushes in and jumps Velvet, but Velvet makes a quick comeback with head scissors and a one-foot dropkick and tags Robin, who of course gets trapped in the corner because she sucks. Dawn comes in and knocks Robin around before tagging Judy Martin. Robin gets a sloppy crossbody for two and a dropkick, but Judy regains control. Sherry tags back in, hits a dropkick, and tags Dawn. Robin comes back with a clothesline and a crossbody to send Dawn back to the docks. She's out. Kai comes back in and jumps Robin, who falls back and tags Yamazaki. Kai slams her, but she bridges out, gets a pair of roll-ups for two. Yamazaki crushes Kai with a pair of knee lifts and a crossbody for two, as Jesse's just in awe of what's going on because he hasn't really seen them yet. So he's just, like, marking out. Titano comes up top, takes Kai over with an arm drag. Sherry tags in, but Titano smacks her around, gets a double underhook suplex for two. Robin tags in to end the fun as she meanders around on offense on Sherry. Kai gets a tag, but Robin takes her over with a sloppy monkey flip and gets trapped in the corner. Sherry comes in and slams her down, follows with a suplex for the elimination. Robin's just a fucking disaster. Shit offense, zero presence, just a zero out there. Yamazaki comes right in with a pair of drop kicks. Sherry falls into the corner and tags Martin, who whips Yamazaki by the hair. Velvet tags in and gets a spinning crossbody for two, and Leilani comes in, but Velvet sends her flying with a slingshot. Moolah comes in, whips Kai around, and follows with a dropkick as Gorilla puts over her lengthy title reign of the past. Judy turns the tide and gets a near fall, but Moolah comes back with a roll-through for two. Yamazaki tags in, but it's yanked by the hair, as Jesse wonders if the women should start shaving their heads to avoid these types of moves. Kai is in and dodges a dive and hits a nice axe blow to the chest and tags Sherry, who's battering away. Martin returns and beats Yamazaki to the corner where she tags Titano. Moolah quickly tags in and lands a clothesline and a slam, working her usual offense, but she gets whacked by a double clothesline by the Glamour Girls, and she gets eliminated. So, big elimination there. Moolah's gone. See you later. Gone for good. Martin stays in and tags Titano, decks the champ, and then tags Yamazaki to work the leg. Velvet comes in and gets a single leg crab, turned into a surfboard. Judy hangs on, though. Velvet dropkicks her back to her own corner and then yanks Sherry in after a tag. Sherry spikes Velvet and chokes away and then hits a rough-looking gut wrench and tags Kai, who slings Velvet by the hair. Titano comes in and she gets whipped around too, followed by a double underhook, but it was such a good near fall the bell rings by accident, which I thought was funny. Sherry comes in, but Velvet tags in as well and gets a giant swing and victory roll to eliminate the champion. Another big win for Velvet, who's really looked good lately. I feel like she's someone that should maybe put the rocket on instead of who they eventually go with. Martin comes in, Velvet escapes and tags Titano, gets a sunset flip for two. Titano's all over Martin, tags Yamazaki, powers into a nice double underhook for two. Kai comes in, gets trapped in body scissors, Velvet takes the tag. Gorilla thinks she's back in too soon, but she holds her own and almost eliminates Kai. Velvet gets another victory roll. Kai falls back and eliminates Velvet, rolling her up for the pin. Nice showing for her. Things break down. All the four girls brawl in the ring with the Jumping Bomb Angels dominating the action. Yamazaki and Kai end up in there. Martin lands a boot to give control back to Leilani. And then Kai goes up but comes up empty. Titano gets a tag and hits a high cross body. And she's out. Martin decks Titano and spikes her to the mat and hoists her with a fireman's carry before just spiking her hard to the mat in a nasty bump. Titano slams down Martin and tags in Yamazaki, who comes off the top with a knee drop. They double team, wipe out Jimmy Hart, and then Yamazaki hits a clothesline and gets the win. A hell of a pace the whole way through. Nothing really ever, they never really stopped. Things go a little slow early, but once Donna and Dawn were gone, I thought business really picked up. And other than Robin being a stiff, I thought everyone looked pretty good. Velvet got a big win that could set her up as a challenger. The Jumping Bomb and Glamour Girls are great as always. Throughout the match and at the end, the women's divisions really improved throughout 87. It was ailing in 86, but they've kind of found their way a little bit by some of these imports they brought in with the, you know, putting the Glamour Girls together, bringing in the Jumping Bomb Angels, Velvet getting a push. Moolah's going to the background. That's helped too. And a fun match. I thought it was just as good as the opener, to be honest, with more quick pace action after the slow start. I went 3 stars in this one too, John.
Okay. I went 2.5. Excuse me. I didn't get the kind of like how Moolah just appeared on the face team, where I know she lost the belt to Sherry, But they never really, like, said, hey, you know, Moolah's good now or whatever. So it was weird seeing her on the face, and I don't think the fans like took to it really.
Yeah,
as far as that.
Yeah, because we haven't seen.
That was confusing.
We had that one little blip, Scott. Remember that one match? We thought maybe she was going to be, but she wasn't.
Right.
But I agree, it's weird. I guess just that they kind of just automatically turned her when she lost to Sherry. I don't know.
Yeah, because the women's stuff was like they would just show some random women stuff like maybe like once a month or you figured, oh, Sherry won the belt from Moolah. You figured Sherry would be the face, but Sherry winds up being the heel, and all of a sudden Moolah just winds up in the face team. So that was a little confusing, but otherwise, I agree with you about Velvet, and this match was perfect for her because we saw, like in the past, in her solo matches, she would have like these quick minute or two bursts, but she would get like tired. Like there was a match that we saw with Sherry where she tried that giant swing and she just like crapped out like during a half a swing. But this time she really got a good one and. So this format was perfect for her because she came in with a lot of fire, you know, for 1 or 2 minutes, and then would tag out before she got tired. And also, Gorilla was confused with the Bomb Angels. I think one time he tried to call one Aizuki, and after that he just gave up. And he's like, "Oh, drop kick by the Bomb Angel." He just gave up as far as associating which one or the other. He just said, "Oh, the Bomb Angel does this and that." And that definitely the only quibble I had was at the finish. It was kind of like Jimmy Hart had to pretty much dance on the rope for like 5 minutes and say "kick me" in Japanese.
Right.
I don't think the Bomb Angels were used to working with like with a manager or something. So you know Jimmy Hart had to practically like put his face like right in the middle of the ring and say "kick me." And the top rope clothesline to end the match was kind of a little bit off. So those are the only quibbles, but otherwise definitely a good showing by the women.
I really liked I liked Jesse marking out too. Like I thought that really put over the Angels, because when Jesse really likes someone, he'll put them over face or heel. And he was like, "These girls are incredible," you know. Like he was really popping big time, which I thought added to the aura as well.
Yeah, the poor Angels, they were so out of place. If they're still, I guess they're still alive. They must be watching now, saying, "We were born 32 years too early," because they would have fit right in with today's women. I mean, back then they were an anomaly with their moves. They were just on a different speed and everything as
God
far as
God bless the glamour
suit.
Girls for actually hanging with them. I mean, God, if they weren't there, they'd really be, there would have been no one.
I actually gave this match 3 stars. I enjoyed it a lot. And I'll talk about Velvet in a minute because Velvet to me was like the.
Andy's at Walmart. Picture her and Scott and slow dancing.
She was 70 when that song came out.
Did you guys sit in the fucking car hop after for a?
That's right. Yeah, we would. Yeah,
banana split.
Yeah, we saw Rubble Without a Cause. Yeah.
I'm sorry, Scott. We got to break out that prom picture again.
I should put it in the.
Oh God, no.
What happened right before that picture was taken? Your date looked a little upset, man.
I have no idea. I have no idea.
She just lost the match to Moolah. That's why.
She should
be honored to be with a guy like that.
She just took a bad dropkick from Velvet McIntyre.
I don't know why she looks so upset during that picture.
I have no idea why. I never went out with her. Thank God. Anyway, all right. Actually, Donna Christianelle is not the one I really want to criticize. The one that really looked
of course
awesome
not. She's a girl.
Yeah, I can't. No, is Rockin' Robin. She fucking sucks. She's awful.
Oh, God.
She's like the one of the Grizzly Smith tree that like got none of the talent. I mean, she was awful. She didn't know how to go off the rope. She always looked out of place. She always looked not in the right spot to do something. She's a disaster.
Yeah.
Talk about going too many favors in the Smith family. She was a mess. Absolute mess.
There's no hook to her either. She looks plain. Everything about her is plain. Just her moveset is plain. Like, she's bland. It's just like a fucking bag of white rice. That is Rocky
really,
Robin.
Just nothing. It's like air. It's like oxygen. Like, you know, there's nothing to it, you know? I tell you something. One thing about Moolah being a face, I bet you Judy Martin and fucking Dawn Marie and all the, you know, my wife, and I bet you they all were sitting there going, you know, Moolah's the face. Moolah's got to take a beating from the heels. I'm sure there's a few receipts from the past that they didn't mind because they were kind of laying into her a little bit at times.
Yeah,
so I'm sure there was some. I'm sure there was some cash in that match. Yeah. You know,
send her right Judy's, back to D'Amato's yeah. Tinder.
Likes, long walks on the beach, Edsels, and and Eisenhower. Yeah, I'm sure with the Judy Martins and all them probably were like, it's about time this fucking bitch got her due. Yeah, I don't know how to say this, but one thing the Bomb Angels did that I really liked that was different than the rest of the, and you were saying, John, how they seemed out of place. They wrestle like men. Women wrestlers back then, hair pulling, fucking, you know, silly parlor tricks, couple of flips here, flips there. Fucking, the Bomb Angels wrestle like Ole and Arn. I mean, like, they would take a body part and beat on it, beat on knees, beat on arms, beat on shoulders. The women don't wrestle like that back then. They actually wrestled like, you know, like male wrestlers, where they, you know, take a body, like, they were beating on somebody's knees. Maybe it was Sherry's, but they were like wrestling Sherry, like, you know, like, it was very different. That I think that's the innovation of them is that they didn't wrestle like 80s women wrestlers. They wrestled like 2017 or 2018 women's wrestlers, not 1987 women's wrestlers. And I think that they did seem out of place, but were so exciting. I think that's what Jesse respected about them is they didn't have that typical hair pulling, you know, crap that we have to watch back then. Is they wrestled very differently. And wrestled like a male wrestler would, going after body parts, specific types of submission moves, and stuff that you wouldn't see Donna Cristianello do or fucking Judy Martin or whatever, you know? And I think that was the innovations of them, that they were so different because they wrestled like they were, you know, like male wrestlers would. I think that was very, very different for them, and that's why they seemed out of place because – the rest of them were, you know, yanking all the you know, hairspray in their hair. And, you know, it was just very different for them. Mm-hmm. I think that's why Jesse had so much respect for them and liked them so much is because they were
He was seeing it for the first time and just fucking popping. He was like, oh, my God. Like, exactly. I haven't seen this before. Even on the men's side, there wasn't too much like this going on. So
right. No, exactly. Velvet. Let me talk about Velvet for a minute because Velvet to me was a lot like Herc in the first match. She impressed me. She wrestled like a babyface veteran. I thought she looked better in this match than Moolah did. Velvet seemed like the experienced babyface. She was getting a lot of good moves in. She commanded the ring. Like, it was a Velvet McIntyre we had never seen. And I agree with you, John, about the fact that she had the opportunity to kind of pace herself rather than have to try to hit the gas when she's not good at hitting the gas, you know?
Right. Because we saw like in WrestleMania 2, she got carried away and you know, she did that dive and her tits popped out and you know, she was all out of control at certain times. So this one, yeah, she was able to get in and out.
Yeah. It was really well done for her that she was paced so well. I was impressed. Velvet is like my silent MVP for this match.
She's a side piece.
Side piece, yeah. It was the accent I liked. Donna's Pittsburgh, you know, spitting jaw out of it. Hey.
Whoa, over Peg has a new apple of Simply Scott's eye.
Oh, God. I'd still be at the fucking dinner table at that house, Jesus. I gotta work at Walmart on Thanksgiving.
Yeah, I feel like the three of us have spent like 10 Thanksgivings together in the last few months, but I guess so.
I know, really, you know? Things haven't changed. So I really enjoyed the match, but the most impressed I was with obviously the Bomb Angels because how different they wrestled as female wrestlers in the 80s. And Velvet really, really impressed me just looking different than we've seen her in the past.
Yeah, she's been more aggressive and
yeah, and confident. Exactly. Yeah. Very aggressive, very confident, kind of controlled the ring when Moolah was gone. And I thought that was very, You know, she ate a pin eventually, but
I think they had something in her that they end up not taking advantage of, and I'm not sure why. Yeah. Because I don't think we see her again either. So I don't know where she goes, but I think they could have had much more. There's some gas in the Velvet tank. Like, her and Sherry, I think, could have been a pretty good feud to carry them forward.
I thought they were pushing her. I thought a push was in place. I thought she was going to be the next one. She was like the singles push, Velvet and Sherry, to the tag push of the Bomb Angels and the Glamour Girls.
Yeah, I mean, she went to the indies. She was wrestling as recently as 98. She was found out she was pregnant and then retired, makes and sells crafts. So she was born in 1962. So she was only 25 here. I mean, so like there was plenty of gas here. I don't know what happened. I don't know why they bailed on her. I thought they had something with her.
Something tells me that it seemed like at that moment, as I'm watching it, that Sherry and Velvet was the singles push, and obviously Glamour and the Glamour Girls and the Angels were the tag push. So it was a fun match, much more entertaining than I remember it being when I watched it again today. We'll see for Velvet. I mean, she really impressed me. And the Angels are the Angels. I can't really say anything about them.
All right.
Well, since it's four matches, why don't we take a breather? Actually, we had pretty good first two matches. What do you think of this big team concept, JR? Looking good so far? I thought it was a lot of fun to get all these guys on and different for the fans.
No, I've enjoyed it. It's been good. Been a good show. And we still got the big matches to come. So it's been well-structured. They started off hot. They kind of, you know, in theory, maybe cool things down, but the crowd actually stayed with that women's match, and it was well worked. So, you know, we're two for two so far.
What do you think, John? What do you think of the concept?
Yeah. The crowd definitely helps. It's a hot Richfield crowd, and then they stay hot throughout the night, as we'll see. But it definitely helps, and the action keeps up. Sure.
Yep. All right. When we return, we'll have two matches left. We'll have the huge tag Survivor match. So we're gonna have a myriad of guys in the ring coming up next, and then of course the big main event for the first time since March 29th. Our WrestleMania 3 main event participants will be in the ring at the same time. So, more coming up after this, because...
Promotional consideration paid for by the following...
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the pro wrestling only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rizzero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlayStation.com. And we offer those to you on three great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the original Place to Be podcast, as well as Main Event, Lucha Afterground, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows, as well as the Our Vantage Point podcast and Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver quick-hit pod blasts on topics old and new.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Psychology is Dead, Puro Potpourri, Stacy and Elliot's Bogus Journey, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Letters from Center Stage, Space City, an NWA Classics On Demand adventure, Through the Years, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, and much more. And on our popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, PTBN Dadcast, Go Home in a Box, NBA Team, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, Geek and Sassy, and Imaginary Stories podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to all of our feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlacementNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlacementNation.com/Amazon when shopping online, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keats' Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlacementNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly, longtime announcer with the WWE, now the voice of Ring of Honor Wrestling. No better place to be than right here on the Place to Be podcast. Make sure you tune in every week.
All right, Nation, we're back taking a look at Survivor Series 1987 here on Thanksgiving night. And, of course, I told that story earlier, guys, about that real big douchebag pizza place owner. And speaking of douchebags, you may hear the theme song for the one of the shows that aired on this night back in 1987. Of course, with that pudding pop sucking piece of shit by Bill Cosby, The Cosby Show. That's the theme song you're hearing underneath us here tonight. And that is bringing us into a very unique Scott Criscolo's Pop Culture Corner. Scott, take it away.
Thank you, JR. Yes, you do hear a TV theme song. No, this was not on the Billboard charts. But as you remember from our last episode, we did the top 10 songs in the country in our last episode, which was the MSG House Show that was only 2 days before this. So if you want to see what that top 10 was, go check out episode 481. I feel like no need to repeat it. We'll have a fresh top 10 on our next episode because – that'll be on the Saturday that the new top 10 comes out. So instead of doing music tonight, we decided, and we're going to do this from time to time here on Pop Culture Corner when we, you know, we're having multiple shows in a week and we don't, you know, aren't going to do the same Billboard chart more than once. What was on TV on this night in 1987? What was everybody watching on Thanksgiving night? Well, of course it was football, and we'll get to that in a moment. But here's
not
what was
night,
on.
Though. Remember, football was only two games back then, so.
Yes, two games, and the second game had ended because obviously Lions and Cowboys, and we'll get to those games shortly. No prime time for obviously quite a while. Only the three big networks. Fox had not fired up yet, so obviously there were plenty of other channels. But on the big three, ABC, CBS, and NBC, yes, NBC had what you're hearing right now, The Cosby Show, which was a repeat.
It was, a different world. Season four, by the way. I made sure I got the accurate theme song of the episode that would have aired that night. So
yes, it was a repeat. A Different World was on at 8:30. Good show. I like A Different World.
It was meant for Dwayne Wayne.
It was meant for Lisa Bonet, and she was on for what, a season, and then she vanished. So
no, I like Different World. I thought that was a pretty good show. Like, it was a good coming of age college show. They tackled some good topics. I actually, even before all the Cosby stuff, I actually kind of preferred it at times, The Cosby Show. I found it like a little bit more relatable in many ways.
I liked A Different World. I liked. What was her name? The southern
Jasmine Guy. Jasmine Guy.
Yeah, her character. I loved her, and I liked, obviously, I loved Dwayne Wayne and his pal there, the other one with the glasses, and of course your boy Sinbad JR would eventually make it out too.
Indeed, he was.
Boy, Sinbad would make it out to a different world eventually. Anyway, all right.
It is a different.
So that was on 8:30. 9 o'clock.
Harrison, of course, was a Dwayne Hardison. Cleophas Wayne.
Yes, Hardison, not Harrison.
What did I say, Harrison? Yes, Harrison. He would also become later on, wasn't he? What's his name? 90210. Was that him? No. Never mind. I'll shut up.
No. He would be in White Man Can't Jump.
That's what I'm thinking. Yeah, I'm getting confused with the. I think the name's confusing me, but Deshaun, what's his name? The basketball player in 90210. I thought it was him.
Oh, right. Yes. I know what you're talking about. Yeah. No, that's not him. No, Kadeem would eventually be on, and then he ends up being on a Disney show or something. Anyway, he was in White Man Can't Jump. We're going to Sizzla. We're going to Sizzla. All right. Those were both repeats. Cheers actually had a brand new episode that night at 9 o'clock. 9:30, they were piloting a new show called Mama's Boy.
Starring Dan again?
No. And then at 10 o'clock, a show called This Is Your Life. I don't know if they were like putting on a repeat from the 50s with Donna Christian Illinois. I don't know. Anyway, that was on NBC. CBS had Bugs Bunny cartoons at 8 o'clock. Oh, my God. Is this 1950-something?
Jesus. They really punted Thanksgiving night, huh? They're like, fuck this. This is a Bugs Bunny.
Even 8:30, they had Daffy Duck on. This is tremendous.
Were these like Thanksgiving specials of Bugs Bunny or just random fucking Bugs Bunny episodes?
It was a special, Daffy Duck special. So maybe it was a Thanksgiving special.
It must have been a Thanksgiving special, yeah.
And then at 9 o'clock, ready for this, if the tryptophan and the turkey didn't put you to sleep, Gandhi would.
Oh, Jesus.
So, CBS is like, fuck this shit. But hit play after the Cowboy game and good night. This is pretty much all we need.
Yeah, they got their ratings. That's all they needed.
Yep. ABC had Sledgehammer on at 8. You remember Sledgehammer, D'Amato?
Peter Gabriel.
Yes. Yes, yes. Very funny. David Reschke, sure.
David Reschke, good show. No, not Peter Gabriel. Although the song was out. 8:30, The Charmings. I don't know what that was. And then a movie at 9, Norman Rockwell's Breaking Home Ties.
So nowadays, that would be on Lifetime.
Yeah, exactly. So there you go. There is your what was on TV.
Here's the Charmings. Was an American fantasy sitcom that follows Snow White and Prince Charming waken from a 1,000-year spell as they adjust to a familiar life in the Enchanted Forest in the modern ways of 20th-century Los Angeles suburbs. That actually sounds like it'd be kind of funny. Starring Caitlin Ohini and Carol Hudson, Christopher Rich as Prince Eric Charming, Brandon Call, who was I'll give you one shot at knowing who that was. He was in a sitcom later in the 90s, I guess.
Brandon Call?
It was actually a show that lasted a while.
Boy Meets World?
Nope.
No.
Any guesses, D'Amato?
Nah, I got nothing.
Step by Step, he was J.T. Lambert. Brandon Call.
Oh, okay.
Luther was one of the seven dwarfs, and then Grumblebee. No,
Coach.
There's no Grumblebee, but sadly.
Luther Van Damme?
Yeah.
Luther Van Damme?
So it looks like there was actually 21 episodes of this show. So there you go. Charmings.
Okay. All right. So there was so that's what was on TV on Thanksgiving night. All right. As I mentioned, we're not going to take the field officially because we already did the previous week's NFL games. We'll be back for the December house show.
Kelly's still getting taken to the woodshed.
Yes, when Mr. Nelson will get his last shot to take out JR for the 1987 NFL season. So we'll do that in a few weeks.
Unlikely, Jess.
But the two games on Thanksgiving, of course, Lion and Cowboy home games. The Lions lost 27-20 to the Chiefs, while the Cowboys lost 44-38 in overtime. I remember this game very well. To the Minnesota Vikings. So there you go. That was Thanksgiving during the day. CBS got a good football game, and then they said, "Fuck this, we're putting on Gandhi." There was actually now JR. Usually the other two sports I think take Thanksgiving off. I don't think you really see a lot of NBA or NHL on Thanksgiving now. I think they both shut off on that day. But there was one game in the NBA on that day. The Kings beat the Nets 110 to 102.
That's such a douche move by the NBA. Like, we really needed this Kings-Nets matchup on there. Like, let them go eat fucking turkey. It's not like it's a showcase game. I thought you were going to say, like, you know, Celtics-Rockets or Lakers-Knicks. You know, like, give me a game. You know what I mean? Like, fucking Kings-Nets in 1987. Come on.
Yeah, and just to give you an idea, here were the two – well, the season was relatively new at the time. The Nets were 2-7, and the Kings were 3-7. So they're both in last place.
Does that have the attendance at all?
Let me see. Let me click on the let me see if the box score has it. Let's see. It was at Arco Arena. The
Todd
attendance
Weber was, there,
was, let me see if they have it, 10,333. So the place was half full.
No, that's actually more than I would have expected, honestly. But,
networks and everybody pretty much used to give up on Thanksgiving night. They used to really be nothing on. That's why this was a good opportunity at the
I remember a lot of
good that the Fed moved into.
There'd be good. You know what was on Thanksgiving? There were some decent college football games on at night. Like rivalry games, like Mississippi State, the Egg Bowl, and maybe Texas.
On Thanksgiving night?
Yeah, there one, maybe one. There'd be a lot of huge games the next day.
No, I know, definitely Friday, but I don't remember on the night itself. I remember the Thanksgiving night itself, there would really be pretty much nothing. You pretty much just passed out. Most part,
there was usually – I do remember one year, maybe it wasn't in 87, maybe it was later on. I do remember watching – because my cousin was a big Cowboy fan, so we'd go to their house after we ate at home, and him and I watch a Cowboy game. And then I remember just throwing ESPN on. One year I do remember Mississippi State on. But for the most part, John, sports otherwise was cooked. But there was a and then there was one NHL game, which I thought was even more mind-blowing. And it was one of our official teams. The Bruins actually played on this night, and they beat the Winnipeg Jets 5-3. Now, let's see how many people were at the Garden that night.
Lose a peg, yeah.
Let's see how many
– I'm guessing it was more than the Kings had, but we'll see.
The tally is they didn't have – there's no attendance for here. Okay. Hockey reference doesn't have attendance, but it is Boston Garden, and knowing the Bruins fans, the place is probably two-thirds full because the Bruins are pretty good. They were 14-8-2 at that point. So there you go. So there's your pop culture corner for this Thanksgiving evening. And we'll probably do that from time to time because normally we'll see what happens the year after, but if there is another show we have on that same week, we'll throw a little TV in there and see. It'd be kind of fun to see how TV evolves. But it's funny that Cosby Show and Different World were repeats, but Cheers was new.
Yeah.
Interesting.
That's a big hook.
That's what I was looking forward to that night, D'Amato, was a new episode of Cheers, which, of course, 1987, they were red hot. I mean, the show was – I don't think – had What's-Her-Face left yet? Did Shelley Long – Woody was on by then because the name of the episode's about him. So Coach had already passed away. I don't know if Shelley Long had left yet.
What season?
87, so it would be season – 7 probably or 6. No, show started in 80.
Was that?
Well, the show started in 82.
Yeah.
Oh, it was 82.
I can say right
so
now.
So November 87, 88 year.
Diane left in season 5.
Yeah, she gone.
So this was Kirstie Alley at that point.
This
right,
was this was like, Kirstie Alley's first season. This is season 6. Oh.
Okay. So there you go. All right. The show was still good. The show didn't lose its luster until probably like 91 by then. So, all right, there's your pop culture corner. Go back to Richfield.
I wonder if Peter Winston was at that Bruins game. Bet he was. Craig DeGeorge with the Hartford Nation, their team, a rowdy mess. They take turns ranting about winning the match. Jimmy Hart comes in and swaps his Glamour Girls jacket for a Hartford Nation one. Gene's in with Team Strikeforce, and they're confident about what is to come as well. And that does set the stage for our big tag team battle. Of course, squaring off here are our tag team champions, Strikeforce, and they are teaming up with the British Bulldogs, the Killer Bees, the Fabulous Rougeau Brothers, and the Young Stallions to take on the Hartford Nation team of the Bolsheviks, Demolition, the Dream Team, the Islanders. Did I get everyone there? Bolsheviks, Demolition, yeah, okay. So there we go. That's all the teams. Great use of the tag division, showing off the depth and sheer awesomeness of what they had on the roster. Impressive sight. Great heat for Demolition and Fuji making their big pay-per-view debut. Building confidence. Pretty cool how the whole team comes out to their music, of course. The Bulldogs and Matilda get a huge ovation as well. The team comes out to Girls in Cars. Grill and Jesse run down the rules, and of course Jesse slips in a Chico as always. Nikolai and Martel open up with Ricky getting two on a roll-up before unloading flurries of right hands. Nikolai kicks Martel down and works the abs before tagging in Boris. Martel turns the tide and gets a crossbody for two as Jesse says this is cool because you get to work in front of all your buddies. Martel tags in Tito, and Jesse says Strikeforce is already looking for all the glory. Boris hammers Tito. Tito catches him with a flying forearm to send the Russians packing. Boris is just a fucking mess out there. Axe comes right in. He batters Tito with clubs to the back and slams him but misses an elbow. Tito tags Jacques, who hits a nice back elbow. Dino comes in, but Jacques grabs the arm and starts a quick string of tags by the Faces, who ends with Davey Boy, slugs away. Smash comes in. Him and Davey trade big blows. Tito comes in and punches away and tags Dynamite, who pelts Smash with a headbutt. Smash then turns the tide and tags Haku, who lays in some chops and a headbutt. Dynamite staggers back and tags in Brunzel, who goes to work on the legs. Blair tags in and keeps on the leg until Haku tags Anvil, who gets tripped up. Roma comes in. He focuses on Anvil's leg. Anvil escapes, tags in Smash, who tags in Axe, and the heels are really picking apart Roma now. The tags keep continuing until Roma escapes and tags in Powers. He gets trapped and worked over for a while as well. Jacques grabs a tag as Jesse puts over Demolition. Jacques hammers away at Axe, but misses a blind cross body block. Axe covers and eliminates the Rougeaus. Tough showing for them. They're really becoming aimless. What do you guys think of the Rougeaus at this point? They feel like a team that is just kind of going nowhere real fast. They need some freshening up.
Yeah, when you see this whole roster, and I'll get more into that in my final comments, when you look at this whole roster all in your one eye shot, you're like, wow, all these awesome babyface teams. And you almost think like the Bulldogs are the ones that seem clueless lost in the shuffle because they've been there so long. But yeah, the Rougeaus just seem like they're just there. They don't have that kind of in-ring charisma that the Bulldogs still do. So they definitely look like they were kind of lost in the shuffle and were just like another team that was then there. John, what do you think?
Yeah, it's tough for the face tag teams that you're going to have your championship program and then you're going to have your secondary program. So they're pretty much behind Strikeforce and the Bees. And
the Bulldogs.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Even though the Bulldogs they lost a lot of momentum too. You can see they're tailing off too, but they still have the cachet that puts them ahead of the Rougeaus, so yeah.
Yeah, but they're about to start a feud too, so that kind of becomes the second-tier feud, right, with that they get into.
Right.
Yeah, the Rougeaus is definitely losing pace here. Dynamite comes in, lands a few shots until Axe tags Tama. Dynamite tags in Powers, but he hits runs into a hard kick from Tama. Anvil comes in and hoists Powers on his shoulder so Haku can come off with an Axe blow for two. Powers dives to tag Roma, but Haku drills him as he comes in. Axe comes in, clubs Roma in the back, cuts him down with a hard boot. Hammer comes in for the first time, pretty deep into the match. He drops Roma with a stiff shoulder breaker for two. Jesse's shocked that Roma's hanging on here. Hammer gets a vertical suplex and tags Dino, who kicks and punches away. Gorilla says Dino's really bulked up, and Jesse says he's now benching 560. Dino gets a gut wrench for two. Roma escapes and tags Blair. Smash comes in and misses a charge in the corner. Dynamite tags in and gets two on a clothesline, but then gets trapped in the heel corner and worked over. Smash traps Dynamite in the ropes and clubs away before shoving the ref to draw the DQ. Gorilla calls him stupid, but I think it's great booking to protect them from getting pinned. Do you guys think they protect the Demolition well?
Yes. Yeah, no, there's no need for them to get pinned. It made no sense. It was dopey, but it just proves their unpredictability as a team and kind of their gimmick,
right,
that they're kind of crazy lunatics. So I was fine. Sorry, excuse me. I was trying to hold it. I was fine. I was fine with it.
We need to call that stroke hotline. Are you okay?
No, I just didn't want to sneeze into the mic, but I was trying to hold it in before I finished my comment, and I couldn't. Yeah, no, I had no problem with it. It just proves kind of the unpredictability of them as a team and the mysteriousness of how crazy they are. I was fine with it. I was good with it. What do you think, John?
Yeah, you have to find different creative ways to eliminate people without jobbing them out, and
Demolition really
still make them look good. Yeah,
they had to really got to the point yet where they should be losing, right? They spent the year really moving up the ladder, so I think it's fine to
exactly
bury a DQ in here. Hart enters for the first time as well. He's pretty into the mash too. We don't see Bret Hart. Crushes Dynamite with a pile driver for two. Hart keeps the pressure on but misses a charge and runs into the post. Powers tags in, but Bret kicks him down as Jesse says Strikeforce is hiding now, which I thought was funny after he said they were going for the glory earlier. Tama tags in and wipes out Powers with a nice clothesline, but he misses a reverse splash off the middle rope. Martel gets a tag, most through Tama with a hot flurry as Jesse's now making fun of Cleveland. Martel gets a dropkick and the crab, but Tama is able to reach up and tag Anvil, who comes in and drills Martel. Anvil eats a boot and a charge. Tito tags in, pelts him with the forearm, but only gets two as Bret makes a save. Tito crumples off and Anvil covers him for the elimination, which I thought was shocking. The crowd did not like that at all. The champs looked pretty weak, I thought. What'd you think of that, Scott? Like, I wasn't a fan of them. I don't know why they... I guess you want to keep the Hearts maybe strong as challengers, but I think Strikeforce goes down way too meekly in this match, and the crowd was pissed because they were super into them.
I agree 100%. I thought Strikeforce looked awful in losing, in jobbing this quickly, big time. Yeah, something wasn't right there. Yeah, I don't know. It was very strange, John. I wasn't expecting that either.
Actually, I didn't mind because the booking-wise, I guess they're trying to create juice for the Hearts. For the Hart Foundation rematches, and they want to give the Hart Foundation a little revenge there for losing the title. So I didn't mind that.
Hmm.
I think it's just a booking decision.
Yeah, I don't know. It may just make it more strong. I don't know. They just seem like the crowd was real into them too, and they just go down. The crowd kind of lost.
Yeah, I love that. Like that comment that Jesse says Cleveland loves their strike force, and then Gorilla had to correct him saying Jesse, this is Richfield, and Jesse's like, oh, whatever, it's a suburb of Cleveland. That's even worse.
Right. Not even Cleveland. So Jesse thinks that pin puts the Hearts back in contention. Powers comes in, comes up empty on a dropkick. Haku tags in, levels Jimmy with a dropkick of his own. Hammer is in next. He's bringing the heat with strikes and a slam. Anvil hangs Powers across the top rope neck first and tags Haku, who crushes Powers with a thrust kick for two. Jesse puts over the Stallion's resiliency as Hammer cannot put them away. Powers gets a suplex. Hammer traps in the corner and the heels just keep punishing him and getting near falls. Quick tagging along the way. Roma eventually escapes, gets a tag, but he gets the shit kicked out of him, too. Powers comes back in now. Jesse dumps on them for keep tagging each other instead of fresh teammates. Brett misses a dropkick and tags Dynamite. Dynamite gets the tag, I should say. Dynamite batters Brett around, crunching him with a nice back suplex or two. Roma's right back in. Brett immediately takes him and tags Haku, but Blair gets the tag as well. Blair's all over Haku, trapping him in the corner, tagging Davey. Powers comes in and gets worked over again until he tags back out to Davey, who pounds on Brett and plants him with a press slam for two. Haku takes the tag, but Davey's all over him. Drops with a power slam, but Haku kicks out. Dynamite gets the tag and hits a headbutt off the top rope, but he gets rattled by it. Haku gets up and levels Dynamite with a thrust kick, and the Bulldogs get eliminated, and that leaves a very interesting pair on the face side in the Young Stallions and the Killer Bees. Roma takes out Haku with a dropkick for two, but Haku quickly turns the tide and tags Bravo. Roma dodges an elbow and tags Powers, who unloads on Dino until getting caught with an inverted atomic drop. Dino stomps away and tags Hammer, who slugs away before hotshotting Jimmy. Dino tags back in, kicks away, tags Anvil, who gets a near fall. Brett comes in and slams Powers into the corner, hanging him upside down and stomping away. Hammer comes in, but Powers fires up and punches back at him. Hammer shoves Powers to the corner, tags Dino, who hotshots Powers and drops him with a side suplex. But he gets up and celebrates and tags Hammer, who then loads up the figure four, but Powers kicks free and tags Roma, who comes off the top and gets a sunset flip on Valentine to eliminate the Dream Team. Anvil comes in and gets trapped, and the Bees and Stallions work him over before Blair gets two on a small package. Brunzell gets two on a high knee, but Anvil uses his power to tag Brett. The faces alternate, working the hitman's leg until Brett turns the tide and Roma gets trapped. They beat on Roma until he escapes and tags Brunzell. Brett gets beat up as Jesse wonders how much the Stallions can really have left. Brett trips up Roma, starts to punish him, but can't get the pin. The heels tag on and off, battering and trying to put away Roma, but he keeps hanging on regardless of the heavy offense. Roma tags Brunzell, who goes to slam Brett, but Tama comes in and dropkicks Brett on top, but Brunzell rolls through and gets a shocking elimination, sending the Hart Foundation to the back. The crowd really liked that one as well done, a nice surprise. Haku comes in and levels Brunzell as he celebrates. The Islanders maintain control for a while, but they can't put Brunzell away. Brunzell finally escapes and tags Powers, who unloads on Haku and tags Roma, who gets a power slam for two. Blair comes in, but Haku kicks him as Jesse praises the Islanders for controlling the tempo despite the odds. Brunzell gets a tag and cleans house, and the Islanders gets a dropkick for two. Things break down. Brunzell tosses his mask on, switches with Blair, and gets a sunset flip from the apron to win the match and gives us a pair of shocking Soul Survivors in the Killer Bees and Young Stallions. Jesse's really pissed here. A hell of a match. The pacing is insane, just nonstop. And outside of the Bolsheviks and Rougeaus, I thought everyone looked good. Like, everyone got a moment to shine. And it just tag, as you could see while I was reading through. Some of the booking was questionable. I thought the heat faded late because the crowd just didn't have that attachment. Like, I know they were going for with the underdogs, but the Bees and Stallions just didn't have the crowd emotion as Strikeforce or the Bulldogs would have. I thought it was a cool moment. It was a surprise on a unique show. But I think if they would have done Strikeforce in one of the other teams or the Bulldogs in one of the other teams, it would have meant more. Because the crowd would have been more into it. As it is, I think they just flattened out. I did like the Protection of Demolition. Strong match that never dragged, despite being, like you said, Scott, there was like 45 or 50 minutes or something. So I went 4 stars on this guy. I thought it was a great match.
I gave it 4 stars as well. It was a fantastic match. Seeing the 18 guys around the apron was pretty badass. I really liked it. I thought it was really cool to see all this massive humanity. Again, as we mentioned earlier, I had no issues with Demolition's DQ. I was fine with it. A good way to keep them strong. We didn't see a lot of them in 87. We saw a couple of matches with them at the Garden, but obviously 88 will be their real coming out year. We talked about Strikeforce again. I was kind of perplexed about that as well. I don't know. Getting eliminated is fine, but it was very early in the match with a lot of teams left, and they just looked pathetic. I don't know. I disagree with you a little bit, John, only because I don't have an issue with Strikeforce getting eliminated, but they were eliminated really early. And as heels, I don't know if the Hart Foundation needed heat. I don't know. It was just strange. You know who looks really awful, and maybe I'm just noticing it more now than before, but Dino Bravo is the worst in-ring guy, like, in terms of just being in the ring. He's always over-dramatic with everything. He's flopping his arms around. He's going way too fast for a big, beefy guy, and he just looks terrible. Just way over the top, way over the top. I can see why Valentine fucking hated him. It's just way over the top. Flailing his arms around and going way too fast for a big dude. He's terrible. I noticed who ref the match. Angry Ref, who we don't really talk about a lot, but Angry Referee did this match. It's all fucking disheveled with his hair all fucked up, his shirt's all undone. He was a goddamn disaster. But to his credit, though, he kept up. We were talking about the pacing. He kept up. I mean, he was having to move around all over the fucking place, pin attempts everywhere, and so as grizzled as he is, I applaud him for keeping up with everything because it wasn't easy. And I'm done with this Bees masked shit. Like, Jesse had every right to. We talked about it almost on every show that we've had the Bees on in the last 6 months. The whole fucking mask thing is it sucks. It's terrible. And again, Jesse looks like a bird. Jesse Guerrero looks like a boob. Like, he can't explain it. Well, Jess, and Jesse's waiting for him. Yeah, I'm waiting. It's like, you know, come on. It's when you're big play by play guy who, you know, can comfortably defend baby faces, can't, then you got a problem. So it's enough's enough with the damn masks. I think it's way overblown, John. There's no need for it anymore. And you're making your babyface announcers look like idiots trying to explain it. So, but overall, though, I love the match. Great match. All the teams worked hard. And it shows that the tag division in the company is just beginning to turn the corner. And 88, you'll see it really turn the corner. But it's just beginning here.
Yeah, Gorilla didn't even he didn't have his heart into defending the Bees, the Master Fusion. And especially because Jesse was really going off. Jesse's like, this is crap. This is crap. It's a bunch of crap.
Yep.
Jesse was great in this one. And the theme, he started early. He was really ragging on the inexperience of the Stallions. So that's what made it an extra surprise, because from the very beginning, he was crapping on the Stallions, saying, oh, they're only tagging each other. They're so inexperienced. So he was kind of setting it up where you thought they were going to get eliminated early. So their win was really a surprise. And Jesse was great in this, because poor Gorilla was even a little confused. Like after two teams got eliminated, Gorilla's like, oh, it's 10-8 now. And Jesse even, he didn't even let it slide. He corrected him. He's like, no, there's two teams out, Gorilla. It's 8-8. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, the poor guy. And the poor cameraman, too. They had to adjust to that mass of humanity around the ring, 18 guys. And so it's tough to get a good shot without getting blocked. So they had to adjust to it, too. But it was definitely a fine match. And ironically, at the end, when the Stallions won, it's just probably the first time in history that the music was played by a member of the losing team. Crank It Up, sung by Jimmy Hart, was played.
Yeah,
so that's got to be the first time in history that somebody from the losing team is singing the theme song for the winners.
That's pretty funny.
Are you surprised to see all the faces having won so far here tonight?
No,
not me neither.
Okay. No,
it's more of a happy, and like we've run into the ground. 1987 is pretty much the year of the babyface. About 20 guys have turned. So
yeah,
and there's very weak heels, and the few strong heels. One is just a part timer, and another one is kind of like a newcomer. Are their two main heels? So it's definitely not a surprise.
No, I agree.
I still think I would have taken this opportunity to put Strikeforce over Strong. If you're going to have the faces win anyway, pick one of the two underdog teams to hang in. And Strikeforce doesn't even need to get the final win. Like, if you want to put the other team over, like, say the Bees still do the same finish, but it's Strikeforce in there at the end, and may the Bees get the pin. I just think, the Bees and Stallions, I thought it just took some of the juice out of the match. Like, you have all these big teams, they're all gone. And it's just, it's kind of just a flat finish to me. That's all.
This is the one match that stuck out where pretty much they said booking was out the window. We're just going to make a spectacle out of this and give a surprise to make the fans happy. We're not really.
But I don't think it made the fans happy. I think that's good.
Yeah, exactly. It was a little tepid.
They overthought it. I think they overthought it.
Yeah. Well, you'll see in the future that obviously they didn't. They didn't take this too much seriously because it's not like the Bees and the Stallions go on to great heights after this. Yeah.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, I think it would have been a good shot to give Strikeforce another win because they really haven't had a big moment on pay-per-view. I mean, they weren't even – this is the first time – not even pay-per-view, even TV. Like, we haven't really seen much of them nationally. You know what I mean? This is kind of the big first showcase, and they lose – I guess they won the titles on TV, but –
Ascendies, yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, you get my point. And we, they're not really well-established. So. All right, we head over to Gorilla and Jesse – who are in the booth, and Jesse says he wants to find out how the million-dollar man Ted DiBiase spends his Thanksgiving, and we do just that via video. DiBiase's driving around, bragging, eats a gourmet dinner. We get clips of him fucking with fans and just burst throughout as he was ramping up his character. I'll pause there for one sec. Any thoughts on this little interlude with DiBiase?
Well, it was great. The basketball is an epic vignette. The basketball scene, of course.
Mm-hmm. Yep, the push-ups or sit-ups, whatever it was. It was push-ups. Yeah, and the woman barking like a dog or whatever. It was hilarious. It was a good thing for him to do because he's obviously become. He's going to be one of the big players in the coming year, and he wasn't on the show yet. No place to fit him. So good spot to kind of do this to kind of stretch the show out a little bit. I was cool with it.
So this must have been the intermission then, huh? They had it pretty late in the show. You would think this would have been – I know that last match was long, so they probably wanted to give everyone a breather after the 50-minute match or whatever, but –
Yeah, because even after the vignettes, like Gorilla and Jesse are like doing like a halftime analysis of what happened. You know, they do a real long analysis of the night's actions.
Yeah, so it had to be the intermission there. Yeah, they kill some time. They chat about what we've seen and preview the main event. Craig DeGeorge, then we go back to the podium. Craig DeGeorge is there in the crowd. Brings out Honky Tonk Man and Jimmy Hart for a chat. Honky talks away his loss earlier. Says Savage just needs to go away because he'll never beat Honky for the title. And he says he's the greatest IC champ of all time. Gene is then with Team Hogan. Hulk is all fired up and puts over how fired up and hungry his team is and says that size doesn't matter. And that brings us to our main event. And that features Team Hogan. That's Hulk Hogan. Teaming up with Bam Bam Bigelow, Don Morocco, Ken Patera, and Paul Orndorff, taking on Andre the Giant, Butch Reed, King Kong Bundy, One Man Gang, and Ravishing Rick Rude. And, of course, there is one substitution here. Superstar Billy Graham was supposed to be on Hogan's team. Of course, we talked about it last week or a couple weeks ago, Scott, where his hip finally gave out and his brief comeback came to an end. Back to the – I don't know if he went back to the operating table, but back to the sidelines. Don Morocco – would take a spot here on this main event. So Morocco is not supposed to be on the show. Takes Billy Graham's slot. So here we go. Huge main event. Massive WrestleMania 3 rematch. Tons of beef on both teams. Really nice spot for Rude. Put right into the main event match. Good for Bundy, too. Still hanging around at the top. Slick leads out the one-man gang and Reed. I thought it's an impressive team. And they get to dance to Jive Soul Bro. The heat for Andre is fantastic. He marches out while Bobby's just gushing all over him. All of the faces get strong reactions. But Hogan just blows everyone out of the water. Power walks to the ring, toting a giant American flag. Jesse's bitching right away that Joey Morella is the referee because he refs all the Hogan's matches. And we saw that back at WrestleMania 3. Morocco and Rude open up, trading punches, but Morocco wins that battle. He tags in Orndorff and loads on his nemesis. Hogan's in next and slugs away and dropkicks Rick with a clothesline. Drops Rick with a clothesline and then some quick elbows. Bammer tags in and smashes Rude with a leaping headbutt. Bigelow press slams Rude and tags Patera, but Ken accidentally knocks Rick to the corner and he tags Reed. Patera is all over Reed with strikes and then tags Morocco, who plants him with a dropkick. Orndorff tags in and hits a dropkick too and then lays in some strikes. Hogan returns and him and Paul hit a double clothesline. Hogan follows a leg drop and that's it for Butch. Tough night for the Natural. Andre comes in and Hulk celebrates and we get a great showdown, but Morella claims that Hogan tagged while he was high-fiving and Jesse just flips out saying Joey's saving Hogan yet again here by making him go to the sidelines. Ken Patera comes in. Andre just leaves. He's like, I don't want this creamy leg scrub. Give me Hogan or not, nothing. Bundy comes in. Patera hammers away as Jesse's shocked by how well and strong the faces have looked. Orndorff tags in, as does Gang, and Paul unloads a flurry of hard right hands to send him reeling. Paul runs into a boot and Rude tags in and punches away, but Orndorff drops him with a clothesline. follows with a slam and keeps the pressure on, grabbing a near fall, tagging Morocco, who meets Rude with a clothesline. Gang comes in and overpowers The Rock, but Don dodges a charge and tags Patera. Ken punches away and gets a crossbody for two and then cracks him with a high knee. Gang goes to the eyes and shoves Ken to the corner where he gets worked over and choked away. Gang grabs the chancery and eventually levels Ken with a clothesline. Ken's gone. I thought it was a good night for Ken. What did you guys think of Patera out there?
Oh, this is like his last.
I thought he looked
his,
right.
His last moment of glory. Sure, all three of them, Patera, Orndorff from Morocco, were really surprising. I haven't seen this in a while, and they must have known they were on their last leg, and this was their last chance. But once again, about the baby faces, I mean, they all turned this year too. So there was not much room for with all these baby faces. So they all had their working boots on, and they were all fired up, and they were all. Like friendly, the tag team continuity, they were tagging back and forth. They were on fire. This was probably Patera's last moment of glory.
Yeah. No, I think it was good. He was aggressive and moving quick.
The fuck was that thing on his arm, though? Good grief.
Yeah, giant bionic.
Yeah, fucking cyborg?
Well, he had that fucked up elbow, right, or whatever he hurt. So
yeah, yeah. Just had that injury, yeah.
He was using it for a weapon. He actually raked eyes with it. And he was
really he looked good. He was the most spry he looked since his comeback, I thought.
Yeah.
Hogan comes right in, hits a clothesline and some chops, and tags Bigelow to a huge pop. Bammer punches away, but the two bulls collide with a shoulder block and go down hard. Rude and Orndorff tag in. Paul dominates some more, just pelting him with strikes and a suplex and a huge backdrop. Paul cues up in the pile driver, but Bundy cracks him from behind, and Rude rolls him up to send him packing, and that's it for Orndorff. Rude's a nothing all match, but still gets that one up on Paul in the end. Morocco comes in, drills him from behind but while he poses, and then Bammer comes in and suplexes him. And after Hogan high knee, Morocco eliminates Rude with a power slam. His night's over. Bundy comes in, misses a knee drop. Morocco works the leg. Bundy escapes and tags Gang, who mauls Morocco and puts him away with the 747. I thought Morocco looked real good, too, in there. Full of energy and good offense, and I've actually enjoyed him as a face so far. Bigelow comes in and tries a sunset flip, but Gang sat down hard on his chest. Bundy follows with a knee drop and levels Bammer with a hard clothesline. Bundy drops a knee and covers, but Hogan makes the save. Bundy and Gang maintain control, but Bigelow hangs in and stays alive. Andre comes in, but Bigelow escapes and tags Hogan to a massive pop. Hogan decks Andre with right hands, but Andre blocks it with a choke. Hogan comes back and chops and punches and wipes out everyone. Bundy trips up Hogan and pulls him outside, and they brawl down the aisle. Gang meets him, but Hogan slams him on the floor in a nice spot. Bundy gets slammed too, but Hogan gets counted out and eliminated, which is really pissed off the crowd. But I thought it was great booking because we get a little Hogan-Andre appetizer, but not too much, and you protect Hogan. Bigelow has some big odds against him. He and Bundy end up in the ring. Bigelow drops Bundy with a clothesline and drops an elbow for two. Bundy's rattled, but Bigelow drills him with a dropkick and works the leg and then slingshots from the outside and splashes Bundy to eliminate him. Gang comes right in and clubs Bigelow and works him over with heavy offense. He heads up top but misses a splash, and then Bigelow eliminates him. So Bigelow's rolling now. Andre comes in and batters Bigelow with clubbing blows and headbutts as the crowd is buzzing. Bammer starts to avoid Andre by diving around the ring to catch his breath, but he eventually misses a dive in the corner, and Andre just crushes him and then gets a double underhook for the win. After the match, Hogan comes out and drills Andre at the belt to send him scurrying and then poses. Great match, nonstop action, lots of heavy offense. The energy and heat is so good. You can just feel the star power, young and old. Andre getting the win was neat. He needed to get reestablished after Mania, and he looked like a stud with that massive presence. And I love how he just, like he just wants Hogan. He doesn't give a shit about Patera or anyone else. Bigelow looked great, too. He lasted to the end, got the big eliminations. The crowd was super into him. And nice showing by almost everyone. A fitting main event, you know, right down to Rude and the guys. Really, outside of Butch Reed, I thought everyone got some shine. I went 4 stars on this one, Johnny.
Yes. Three and a half for me. This was definitely a nonstop action. And Orndorff really stood out. This was one of his last moments of glory. He was really fired up, and the crowd was still behind him. He gets more shine for his heel runs, but his face runs here were underrated. Even though this is like a no-win situation, putting him with a Humperdinck, and they definitely want to put Rude over in this situation, but he still had it. He had a connection with the crowd, and that spot where he was setting up for the pile driver, and the crowd was hot for that. And going to what you guys were talking about last week with Rude, when he first came in, he was just all about the selling. I think he was too deferential to the veterans, and pretty much all he did was sell. As a matter of fact, Jesse pointed it out. he said, "Oh, Rude's having an off night tonight." So Jesse really made a point to that because he really didn't do anything. He really just all sold and he got that roll up and that was it. And one thing I didn't like though, that was a stupid spot when Hulk was celebrating and was hugging the guys and then Morello insisted that he tag because all they had to do was tag back in. So that part was a little stupid. It was like, oh, what do you mean? What do you mean I can't tag? So he was like outside. All he had to do was get a tag back in and you still could have had it. So that was a little far-fetched for me.
No, I agree there. That's a really good point. It was, you know, and that's not the last time we'll see Hogan kind of getting, stupid protection in these matches.
Yeah.
Scott, I'm curious your thoughts because when we did the show, 7 years ago in early 11, I know in our old written reviews too, we dumped all over this, right? And Hogan couldn't lay down. He got counted out. Him coming back in to pose and like we just shit all over it. But I think just maturation and years of watching and now watching the evolution from 85 to here, I completely get why they did what they did and how Hogan couldn't really get pinned in this spot. He just hadn't done that, hadn't happened yet. And you don't want to do it yet, I don't think. And I get what they did. I get why he came back out at the end. I will say that I thought Bigelow was a nice proxy. Like the crowd really, the crowd could have checked out when Hogan got eliminated. But they didn't, and they stuck with Bigelow. So I'm just kind of curious your thoughts of how much has changed for us across these 7 years, if you felt the same way.
The count out part, I totally understand now. Made sense. Because it really was all about and I like Andre's in on the other side of the coin. I liked Andre's whole – well, if I'm not, I don't want Hogan. Fuck, I don't give a shit about these other clowns. I want that guy. And if you're not going to let me, if I can't have him now, then I'm just going to go back in my corner and let one of my boys take care of, this creepy bum with a stupid weird arm thing. I want that guy. So I got that. I still don't like the posing at the end. I thought that sucked.
You can still say that Hogan acted like a dick because, everybody else, the whole night, when somebody got counted out, that was the rules. Everybody else just gracefully went to the locker room, and he had to come out. So you could argue that he had to come back out and act like a dick and climb up the spot.
Yeah, but you could say he got fucked, though. Like, no one else really got fucked like him, like with Gang and Bundy tying him up on the – I mean, it's Hogan, but I get him coming back because, they wanted to send the crowd home happy. The faces won all night. You end with the heel team, which I thought – that's kind of where I was going before. I liked that they had the faces win all night because it added like, are they just going to sweep? And then it almost sets up the heels winning the big match.
Oh, yeah.
But I didn't mind Hogan coming back out rewatching it because I think that's just what the crowd wanted. They wanted to see him pose and stand tall at the end. Like I think that's just what they wanted. They didn't want to see Andre just standing there.
All right, I'll compromise on that because they did do Andre and Bobby did do a promo at the end. I would have had Hogan come back out after the cameras went off the air.
Yeah,
let Ridgefield's crowd get Hogan at the end, but let the paper but give the pay per view audience. Fuck it.
And also they did cut away. They did cut away from Hogan posing, and they showed like Bobby and Andre going back to the dressing room. And Bobby was awesome. Bobby was like celebrating, and he was so happy. Like this is a great night for Bobby. Like vindication. All the guys that fucked him, like Patera and Orndorff, guy got eliminated, and Andre finally got a big win. So this is a big night for Bobby.
Yeah,
good vindication for him. And they gave him that last interview too. So
yep, yep. So I have no problem within the arena for the Richfield crowd to have Hogan, but I think the pay-per-view crowd needed to see that Andre finished on top, and you're pissed. Oh, well. Babyface has won the other three matches. Hogan didn't lose a title, and he didn't get pinned, so, whatever.
Yeah, at least I closed with that interview with Bobby and Andre. So.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, we can talk about that now, too. Gene catches up with Andre and Bobby. They're gloating and pissed off over what happened. Heenan says Hogan can have Andre if he just puts his name on the line. Andre survived everything and says Hogan cheap shotted him after the match. But that's how we end the show.
Yeah. Some other points. I talked about Patera and his goofy arm thing. The Joey Morella thing, I agree with you, John. That was idiotic. All right, well, then tag me back in.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like it was too much. It was that was another overthinking thing where, we have to do this, kind of thing. So, I didn't like that either. I thought that was moronic. Bigelow's pops were big, were no pun intended, big. When he was in the ring, the crowd was digging him big time. So unlike the Bees and the Stallions at the end of the tag match, Bigelow was definitely the right guy to have at the end, if not Hogan. As compared to the other guys who were all, you know, kind of used up or whatever. Bigelow was kind of fresh and new and different looking. So that was smart to at least have Bigelow. Yeah, he got pinned, but he did take out, you know, he was facing about, you know, 1,000 pounds worth of beef on his own. So he looked good. He looked strong in the end. I wonder if they thought that he would be a good future, like, honky opponent. You know what I'm saying? That might have been something on this, you know, in the back of their minds. Yeah, I think that Bigelow was a good choice to finish that match. There was that one sequence where Hogan and Andre finally get in the ring, and they're just throwing fucking bombs at each other. Chop, chop, yeah. Punch, yeah. Chop.
It was a perfect
shove,
tease.
Kick, boot. It was awesome. It was awesome. It was a great, great frustration for Andre and frustration for Hogan, and they were just going off on each other. It was awesome. I loved it. I think that was missing to a certain extent in the WrestleMania 3 match, but obviously the philosophy of that match was different. I think he kind of knew that Andre's team was going to win after Hogan got counted out. I seriously thought Andre was going to get pinned by any of these other clowns. So, but to Bigelow's credit, he kept the crowd. He did keep the crowd engaged when they could have, like you said, JR, where they could have very easily given up and tanked it. The crowd didn't. They stayed with Bigelow till the end. And then once he pinned the other two guys, you knew Andre was just going to pick the bones, and he did, and he should have. So,
what do you guys think? I one complaint about the Andre's finisher, the underhook suplex. Oh. Not quite devastating.
No, they should have had him sit on him. You know what I mean? Like, that would have been better.
Yeah, that's the thing. I don't think they trusted Andre to move anymore.
Well, just the avalanche. I mean, he could have done the butt avalanche in the corner.
Yeah, it seemed like that underhook suplex thing is probably like the only thing that he could actually hit. Yeah. Like all the work he really could hand out, you know.
Because you've seen like an 84 and 85 where he even did like the splash from the second rope. That butt splash was devastating. But I guess they couldn't trust him with it, or his body couldn't handle that no more. You know,
yeah, I'm sure
slips. He slips and puts all his weight on it. He might kill somebody. Yeah.
No, I'm sure his back was probably killing him. I'm sure his whole body was still killing him. We'll find out when the documentary comes out. I think from a TV perspective or a pay-per-view perspective, I think they should have shut the cameras off when Andre finished the match, and that was it. And let the Richfield crowd have kind of a special treat of Hogan coming back out and doing that stuff, you know, doing all his usual histrionics. That's just my opinion. But great main event, though. And I agree with you about Orndorff, too, John. They were pumped for him.
Yeah.
I think the crowd was just happy to have a cool show on a holiday. I really think just they were just cool.
Yeah, they were great the whole night, for sure.
Yeah.
You know, all those guys look good. All of Hogan's team look good. Honestly, except for Reed, everyone else stood out. All right, let's get to our awards here to wrap things up. Match of the night to me was even though I went 4-4 on the last two. To me, it's the main event. It had the biggest stars. It had the biggest moments. Andre getting his win. I thought it was really well booked. That was my match of the night.
I concur.
I concur as well, although the tag was pretty awesome.
Yeah,
the tag was an
acceptable match. Great.
But I'll go with the main event, man.
All right, the Cousin Jr., which is the worst match of the night. It's fun. I mean, this might be the best worst match of the night we've had. Right? I went 3 stars on this. The Team Moolah versus Team Sherry. I think you could argue it was maybe even slightly better than the opener. But again, just some of the stuff with like Robin dragged it down, some of the booking decisions. But I thought they did a real nice job once Donna Criscola went out and we moved on from there. But what did you guys have here for the junior?
Yeah, the women too, but not by much. The tag team barely ekes it out, but yeah.
Yeah, I would have put the – I'll go with the women's match, but I may even put the opener as well, only because that heel team is just so piss poor. But I can never give anything with Savage a worse match of anything. So I'll go with the women's too.
Yeah, the greatness of the face team makes up for it.
Yep, I agree. Yep.
All right, the Hogan Award for the MVP of the night. I went with Andre in this one. I thought his presence was great. I thought he looked dominant. I loved his nonchalant "fuck you" of Ken Patera. And then the ending was cool too. He just calmly, after Bigelow was picking off his teammates, he just comes in, squashes them against the wind. Like it was such a cool, collected night for Andre, just reestablishing himself as the top dog.
I agree. Andre definitely had that presence. that just made him that much of a badass. You know, I go with Andre too.
I'm gonna go with Bobby. Like even during the before the tag team match, he gave a fired up interview. Bobby was extra fired up, and at the end, I know we talked a lot. They showed Hogan pose, but they also showed like Bobby how happy he was going up the aisle with Andre, and he was celebrating and that final interview too. So I'm going with the Brains.
All right,
good choice.
All right, so next we have our Uncle Elmer for the Biggest Loser of the Night, or Worst Worker. Rockin' Robin normally would probably be the choice, but she gets the stay of execution because Dawn Marie was just fucking absolutely useless. I mean, I she was clearly the worst worker, even worse than Christianello. It just brought nothing to the table. Robin, again, I think on most nights would have been the worst, but Dawn Marie was just – she may as well not even came. I mean, that's how bad it was.
I just think that I think Rockin' Robin is abysmal. But nah, I'm going with Rockin' Robin. I'm sorry, she doesn't get a pass for me. She's fucking terrible. What makes it worse for her? Well, the reason I think she should get it is because she's more high profile as a babyface, and she
right,
sucked.
I can
Dawn Marie, who gave
that
a shit about her? I mean,
I can fuck with that. We'll go with I'll go with Robin. What do you got, John?
I'll give the Who was a break, and I'll go with Boris. He was like on a speed on a speed beyond like that tag team. Everybody's in there all fired up and all fast, and he was just on the slowest speed possible. Man, he was just so out of place in that tag match. So I'll go Boris.
It was brutal. He was real bad. He just looked completely lost and over his head in there. He had no clue what was going on.
Man, it's hard to get over his head.
All right, for the best moment of the night, I went with Bigelow's run at the end. I thought, like, watching him win the crowd back over after Hogan got eliminated and then mow through the two guys for Andre finished him off was a real, like, star-making moment for him. I thought it was a big night. I think maybe he could have been a runner-up MVP as well for Andre. That was my favorite part, was Bigelow's big run at the end.
Yeah, I would like to put Velvet McIntyre's performance in the women's match, which was a big shock, but I'll go with Bigelow at the end. I mean, they gave him the opportunity and he succeeded. I mean, he pinned, two studs, two big hosses. So yeah, I'll go with that. I'll go with Bigelow.
I'm gonna have to go left again. Back to the first match when Jake, Macho, and Steamer were taking turns beating the fuck out of Honky and made him run away. I'm gonna go with that.
That was good too.
All right, Honky Bales. All right, our Juice Award. Some prime candidates here tonight, but anytime The Rock is in the house, you gotta go Morocco. You guys
is it still the Arcidi Award?
Well, let's see. I think we looked at this last time. So Morocco now has won. All right, so are you both going Morocco?
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, definitely The Rock. No, absolutely.
All right, so let's see. Arcidi, he won 1, 2, 3, 4. But Morocco actually had an early win back in 86. So there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 now. Yeah, we got to change it. It's no longer the Arcidi. It's now the Morocco.
Boy.
You want to call it
the Rock?
We'll call it the Rock Award.
The Rock Award.
So actually, we'll call Morocco. We don't want any confusion.
Yeah, it might be confusing with Dwayne. Yeah.
All right, so Morocco Award official now. All right, let's go final grades. I thought this was a fantastic show. I mean, four matches, all three and above. It chugged along. Everyone looked good. The crowd was hot. Just really well worked. A hidden gem of a show. I think it doesn't get talked about enough. We'll watch how Survivor Series evolves, but I think it's pretty highly ranking when you look at the early concept of the show. I went with an 8 out of 10 on this. I thought it was an excellent pay-per-view. I think it's a standard bearer for what Survivor Series could be, and I really enjoyed every moment of watching it.
Yeah, I was pleasantly surprised. It's aged well, but I'm going to go with a 7.5. Some of the women's stuff and the tag ending, as we talked about, were a little flat, so to keep it from like an 8 or 9, so I'll go with 7.5. Though it's definitely aged well. Though it's better than what I thought. I wasn't exactly looking forward to rewatching this after all these years, but I was pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, I'm going to give it a 7.5 too. But I agree completely with both of you. It's definitely aged well. It was actually a fun watch. I thought about it today. I'm like, oh, should I just like skip this and just, you know, just
go off
assume
memory,
my yeah. assume my comments? But I'm like, yeah, Donna, what do you think? But I watch it again and I'm like, you know what? It does hold up. The crowd, the Richfield crowd's hot. Everybody had their most, I mean, 95% of the people that worked had their boots on. Yeah, I 7.5 for me. I thought it was very well done. It was a good concept show, and I think it was going to have staying power. So, yeah, 7.5 for me. Definitely a show that if there's, you know, it's one of those shows on the network where you don't know what you want to watch or you're doing something else, you just want something on in the background. I would throw this on again just to listen to Grill and Jesse. And get an idea of what the concept was originally for some of our younger fans. I would definitely watch it again.
Oh yeah, well worth it. All right, all right. So I think we had mentioned last week that our next couple weeks are going to be kind of hectic. We're planning to be here next week, looking at the Saturday's Main Event from a couple nights later.
Yep.
And so it will not be the beginning of next week. If we do, it'll be the end of next week. We're hoping to squeeze it in, and then the week after will be the December 87 house show, so we'll wrap up the year of 87, and then we're probably going to have a few weeks off between March and early April. So just an early heads up here that we're going to have some gap in our timeline, our programming. We'll keep you posted on both here and social media. So as of now, we're planning to be back next week for the 11/87 Science Main Event. We'll keep everyone posted if that falls through. Scott, you go main event this week. Anything you want to plug?
Absolutely. Fresh episode of Main Event will be this week, and Nate and I are going to have and Steve Willey will be back. A very special guest, old school, returning to Main Event this week, because this gentleman, I'm going to keep it a surprise, but this guy was at Elimination Chamber last night in Vegas, and he's going to join us to talk about what he thought live of the show, and we'll recap things. And then we will have our third installment of our TNA pay-per-view rewind. So fun show this week, Main Event. So check it out. Stay tuned.
Of course, you can check out the GWWE podcast. You can hear you give any kind of horseshit explanation you may find for ranking Special Delivery Jones, but not AJ Styles. I'd like to hear that explanation.
Time.
You can time what?
You're going to start this now? Really?
You can add up all of Special Delivery's matches, star ratings.
Did you sit and plan this all day?
You can add up all of SD Jones' match grades that would not equal one AJ Styles match. That's where we're at.
Fucking that's really what you did today.
AJ doesn't make the cut, but
John, he didn't watch Survivor Series today.
SD fucking Jones.
The last 30 seconds.
SD fucking Jones.
85.
Awful.
Yep.
Awful.
That's what he did.
Anyway, check that out. Great content. Aaron and I should have another Made the Cut coming as well. Of course, check out Chad and Andy. They did a great podcast, too. So tons of really good GWWE audio up. The top 75 have been released on top of the honorable mention. So 25 remain, or 24, 25? Yep. I think 25.
25.
Top 25 remain. Those should be coming out as well in the coming days and weeks. So keep an eye out there. Thanks to everyone who's participated in that project. Also, if you're interested in meeting up with us, if you're going to be in New Orleans or WrestleMania, reach out to me on social media. We're starting to plan out our pre-game meetup, as always, that we do every WrestleMania Sunday when we have these trips. So a big contingent of us will be there in New Orleans. Check that out, too. Twitter, place number 2BNation, Facebook.com/placeBNation, Instagram, Tumblr, all the shit. Keep on top of us each and every day. PlayStation.com/Amazon for all your shopping. I'm done. We're out. We'll see you later. I'm going to go watch the Best of SD Jones compilation that I'm sure is out there somewhere. It must be. Trying to be ranked.
Better than anything you'll watch otherwise.
Awful. All right. Bye.
Peace.
Come on, Donna. Watch SD Jones.